Hey, welcome to the film podcast. Yeah, I got it right. What's up, guys? How's everybody doing? I feel like Bane.
I think we're all doing better than you.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll stay that way.
Yeah, I got a cold, so if I sound weird, it's because I have a cold and I sound like I'm wearing a Bane mask.
You are an interesting combination of Bane and Japanese businessman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how's everybody doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah. As always, I am Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
I'm Kevin.
And today we have guests. Yeah, because we're talking about his topic. And it is Reveal Yourself.
I'm Brian. Rupert Pupkin Speaks is my blog.
And you're also on Twitter as Bob Freelander.
Yes, complicating. Too.
any other alias? Have we ever gone through your entire list of aliases?
I'll never reveal them all. Okay. What's the point?
What's your DJ name? Yeah.
None to your knowledge.
He's the man of a thousand faces.
The man of a thousand names. So today we're talking about film discoveries of 2012. You got that on? That's one of your topics on your blog currently.
Yeah, it's a series I've run. This is the third year, I think, I've done it. It's just something that fascinates me, just to get a bunch of people, that film fans, together and talk about stuff they saw, older movies they saw for the first time in any given year. So
yeah, it's always cool listening. It's always a cool list reading, you know, other people's choices and stuff and saying, oh, that's interesting. That's their taste.
Yeah, no, and I've gotten to the point where there's quite a variety of stuff. So yeah. plenty of ammo for me for any given year to try and find new stuff to watch, which is the main reason I started it.
Yeah. And do you only go with like your favorites, or do you also go with like some like guilty pleasures and stuff?
Well, this year, I mean, with the I started using Letterboxd this year, and that made it so much easier to keep track of everything. So my list of stuff that good, you know, entertaining stuff and really good stuff was like 100 films long this year. So I had to split my list up into three parts, but there's definitely a lot of that kind of cheesier. I don't know if any of those are in my top five, but the fun stuff definitely made some of my lists.
Very cool.
I've only got part one on my blog right now. Part two is next week. Well, actually, part two will probably be up when this comes out.
This will be up tomorrow.
So. Oh, very cool.
Yeah. All right. So let's start off by talking about movies we've seen in theaters or anything new you've seen.
Well, it's been a while since we last met, yeah. So I feel like we've seen a bunch of different movies.
This is our first episode of the new year. So excited.
Happy New Year. Yeah. Wait, so do we have our anniversary episode yet?
No, we don't. Okay. I guess this technically could be.
Is this 52? Well, our anniversary has passed.
Yeah.
Well, right, but I meant like the 52. The 52.
Oh, we're at 52. 54, I think. Oh, really? Maybe you're right. Maybe this is 52. I don't know.
Way to go, Ricardo. You forgot our anniversary.
we lost an episode.
He's in the doghouse.
We lost an episode, and then
That's
and then,
not going to help his cold being in the doghouse.
Yeah, I'm going to get pneumonia in the doghouse. All right, so it's been a while. What have you seen?
Everything.
I saw Lincoln, finally.
Okay, how'd you like that?
It's cool. It should have been called 13th Amendment, not Lincoln. I enjoyed it. It was cool. It was like Social Network, but old-timey.
Oh, old-timey social
cool
networks.
Way to describe it. Yeah. Like that.
It was a lot of talking. I liked it. There were some funny parts, and I enjoyed it. And then I saw Argo, finally. I love that. It was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot. Argo, fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Jenny, anything new in theaters?
I saw three things, finally. Say? I saw Les Mis, I saw Django, and I saw Zero Dark Thirty.
Nice.
Yeah. All right,
let's talk about Les Mis.
Have we talked about any of those before?
I don't think.
I think you talked about Les Mis on our last episode.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's talk about it.
So I honestly don't remember much of the musical before I went into it. I'd seen it when I was really younger. I couldn't remember the storyline or, you know, who played what. You know, I didn't remember any character points or anything, and I heard a lot of people were confused by the movie that had never seen anything about it, but I like understood it. It was fine. I mean, it didn't not make sense or anything. It was a musical. It's what you expect in a musical. I liked that portion of it. I thought it was done really well. the Russell Crowe maybe could have been a different actor. I think they probably just picked him because of his name. But and other than that, I liked everyone else. I just don't like Amanda Seyfried at all. There's just something I have against her. I can't get over it. So
I just hate her face.
I just hate her face. That's not going to change.
I still haven't met like a girl who likes her. I think
I don't know why
thing.
That is.
I think it's a girl thing. It's her eyes. They're like, whoa.
They're pretty bulgy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's at her eyes.
She's
yeah.
got, she like goes head to head up with Steve Buscemi for craziest yeah. bug-eyed eyes.
I think she might have a beat.
Yeah, I think so. I yeah. think so. By like at least like an inch. Yeah. So you liked it?
Yeah, I liked it.
And Adam, I forgot, what did you think of it?
I did. I really liked it. I liked it a lot. I agree about Russell Crowe. And Amanda Seyfried. I mean, I liked her in some things, but not so much in this.
Yeah, I could have done without her. The one girl that played, I can't remember how to pronounce her name. Emmeline?
Eponine.
That's it. I always want to put an L in there. She's, I guess, from the original, not the original, but the Broadway.
She was in a Broadway version. I think she was in a Dreamcast version. I don't know. There's so many different versions of
Dreamcast, like the game system.
No, there was so yes. there was a
brought to you by Sega. Like,
it's like a best of Les Mis. Where they bring all the like okay. everyone's favorite.
It's like
Dreamcast,
the All Stars.
I don't know if she was in that, but like maybe a revival of it.
Yeah. She was really good.
Yeah.
And I want to see her in more stuff. I thought she was a fantastic actress and musical theater addition.
I was really surprised by Eddie Redmayne as
Which
Marius,
one?
The one that Cosette.
I
wasn't, even though I knew it was musical, I wasn't expecting him to be as good as
that. And I liked Aaron Tveit a lot too. Is that how you say his last name?
Couldn't tell you.
He was the other like commander of the French Revolution or whatever it is. I don't know my history.
My favorite review of Les Mis is someone who posted like, and then Gladiator's chasing Wolverine. And then Catwoman has a baby at Borat's house. It was really, I was like, I want to see this movie now.
They were fantastic in it.
I'm fairly confident that you will hate this movie, Ricardo.
Oh, yeah. Don't see this.
I'm not going to see it.
Don't even think about it.
Because someone else was relaying a review that someone had given them where it's like they were singing the whole time. I hated it. I'm like, well, it's Les Mis.
Yeah.
It's not if you want the dramatic version, go watch the Jeffrey Rush, Liam Neeson version.
Yeah. He's like, is that Karate Kid too much martial arts? could have done it with less martial arts.
Yeah. I loved Helena Bonham Carter and Borat. What's his name?
Sasha Baron Cohen.
They were fantastic.
The little girl who plays young Cosette. She was really good.
Oh
also.
Yeah, she was really good too. Yeah.
I saw. What else did I see? Did anybody? Oh,
which
Brian? Did you see anything new?
I saw Hitchcock.
Oh.
Mm.
Did not like it.
Really?
Nope.
So.
No, really let me down. I don't know if
like all the stuff with Ed Gein.
I did not like that stuff. I just felt like it was really misguided. It didn't really fit. I felt like it was.
Oh, I prefer that to everything else.
Like, oh, I see. Just, okay, all
I
right.
Like I want to. I think this is what I said when I talked about it before. I just want to see Hitchcock and Ed Gein like a road movie.
That I would see.
Because Michael Wincott was really creepy as Ed Gein.
No, he was. That stuff was creepy, but I just felt like that kind of a thing I've seen done and done better, and I didn't want it in this movie. I wanted to see more stuff about the actual making of Psycho, and there just isn't enough of that in there, mm-hmm. you know, for me. And then there's, I mean, because it starts to focus on the plot of, you know, Hitch and Alma and like their relationship. And it's just, it becomes almost like a Lifetime movie for me.
It was very Lifetime movie.
Which, I mean, they're good performances, but it just totally took me. And that last line, I don't want to spoil it, but the last line he says to her at the premiere is like ridiculous. it's laughable to me and totally took me out.
Does he say, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn?
He might as well. It's pretty close. I mean, as far as like Hitchcock, it just didn't make any sense and it totally took me. Anyway, I really wanted to like the movie. I love Hitchcock and maybe I'm a little sensitive about it. I don't know, but I'm not usually a hater, but I just didn't care for this.
I didn't really the trailer didn't really grab me, so I'm gonna skip it maybe.
I had really low expectations, so I found it easy to enjoy, but I was not interested because I saw a TCM screening of it with the director and I was like, I'm good, I don't need to hear what you guys say.
I don't think I would have wanted to.
I had low expectations for Glitter and
I would
love that one.
Did you just admit that you've seen Glitter?
Brandon tried to get me to see it for A little bit of.
So you have seen portions of Glitter.
I saw the title sequence.
You are on the record. You are officially on the record as having watched part of Glitter.
I've seen Glitter, and I would gladly watch it again before I watch Hitchcock, for sure.
Wow.
Just my take.
That should be on the movie poster.
Yeah.
That'll sell tickets.
Yeah. Adam, any new screeners that you got that you watched?
I don't think we've got any new screeners since the last episode because, I mean, things kind of slowed down and then we were gone. Like, no one was in the office to pick up screeners. So there could be stuff. Like, I think it was mostly stuff I've already seen.
Okay.
Like, I know a screener of The Hobbit came, but I already saw that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did we, have we talked about Django Unchained at all?
We did. You and I think.
But, like, on.
Oh, you know, I don't think
I saw that too.
Did we talk about
it? Let's talk about it.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Really?
Did you guys have problems with it?
I did. I just feel like there were some parts missing from it, which Richard Kelly tweeted that he saw like a 4.5 hour version.
Oh, my
God.
So
clearly there's stuff missing. And I think that's, I couldn't put my finger on it. I know it's not Tarantino's best, but I enjoyed it. It's really entertaining. I've seen it twice.
Nice.
I think it's entertaining, but I don't think it's his best.
I totally agree. I enjoyed it. It was a lot more Blazing Saddles-esque than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, as far as Tarantino's movies, like everything else is a tie and then this is the one right below.
Yeah, that's kind of, it wasn't my favorite Tarantino.
Yeah, it's not my favorite, but I mean.
But I would own it. At some point, I would probably own it.
I would definitely own it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed DiCaprio and Sam Jackson. Yes. Like their rapport I don't know how, like how much rehearsing they did or how, but it's amazing. It's just like the scene, sort of the scene when he first shows up to the plantation.
Yeah, that's great.
It was some good.
It was so like, I'm not saying that it was a bad thing, but it was so weird because Sam Jackson's there's like the split role that he does in that, and his persona that he puts on in front of everybody else just reminds me. It's like Sam Jackson doing Dave Chappelle's Sam Jackson impersonation.
Yeah.
It was so weird to watch. Wow. It was just fast. I couldn't look away.
Yeah.
And then they're both really scary.
Yes.
They both get very, very scary, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I think DiCaprio was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz was just phenomenal. God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude's so good.
I guess we saw Zero Dark 30 since...
Yep.
I think I talked about it in the last episode, but I had... been evacuated because there was a fire.
No, you talked about it on the music podcast.
Okay, that's what it was. It wasn't this podcast. Well, I saw it the first time, didn't get to see the ending because I was evacuated. There was a fire at the ArcLight Theater.
Yikes.
But the second time around, I got to see the end. But I mean, I already knew watching the first time, hey, this is my number one. But just watching it again.
Not even having seen the end.
Yep.
It was still...
I'm like, this movie, the last 30 minutes could suck. It's still my number one.
No, I know, it's funny how movies can be that way. Like, taking 3/4 of the way there, you can almost tell.
Oh, yeah.
You almost can't. Certain movies, you're just like, you can't fuck this up bad enough for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just certain movies that are like that, which is cool.
And I think also for me, the about Zero Dark 30 was, I know a lot of people have problems that, like, you're kind of, it feels like you're kind of waiting, you're, throughout the whole movie, you're like, let's kill this guy, you know, like you're waiting to see somebody die. But for me, I like to take it, and I think that was your problem, right, Adam? That's one of your problems with it?
It's a movie that makes me very uncomfortable for general reasons. I'm really glad I didn't see it with a crowd just because there's something scary to me about like that jingoistic, rah, rah, we're the best, number one. Like, yeah, he's a terrible person, and thank God that we got him. But it's just weird, like, rooting on an assassination.
I saw it with the crowd twice, and both times, it was just silent. The whole movie was silent. Yeah. Especially those silent moments at the end were, like, you could hear a pin drop. And for me, it was, I always like to take, I think, I don't know if I talked about this last, I totally didn't talk about it, in the Based on a True Story episode we recorded a couple of weeks ago. I liked when it's something based on a true story, I want it to stand on its own. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like when I saw, The Passion of the Christ. Like, it's like, yeah, I took it out of the Bible, but it's not very cinematic. Like, it's just like, we're just whipping this dude, you know, till he dies. And like, there was no, as a film, like,
I believe that was the pitch.
No, like, we're just going to whip Jim Caviezel. It's gonna be awesome. Well, Gibson's gonna, you know, direct it.
Who's Jim Caviezel? Oh, you know, Angel Eyes.
Oh yeah. I like him. And so, but I feel like if you took somebody that didn't know anything about you know, the Bible or just took an alien and said, watch this movie. It wouldn't make sense to them. You know what I mean? Where if you take somebody who's never known anything about Bin Laden or the U.S. or anything, and you just sat them down, you're like, oh, this is a cool story, and like the character's arc makes sense, and everything just makes sense for Zero Dark Thirty, and that's why I love it.
And Jessica Chastain is just amazing.
Yeah,
I agree with that part. I don't know that I agree that everything makes sense, but I didn't. It's not like I dislike the movie. I'm just that's making me think about things I wasn't thinking about what you just said. And so, I don't know. I'll have to get back to you in the next episode about that.
Yeah.
Maybe watch it again.
It was really intense.
Yeah. Very, mm-hmm.
God,
very
those
intense.
Torture scenes were crazy intense. There was a family that it looked like maybe their son was like middle school age or something. Well, and they like walked. I don't know. Does everyone, am I allowed to say the torture that happens?
No.
Waterboarding.
Okay. Okay. So, after this, there's two. After the second waterboarding. They got up and left. And that was like, what, 15 minutes into the movie, maybe 30.
Why
they
did
got
you
up
bring
and left.
Bring your middle school kid to I know. That just doesn't.
I
gotta kill Osama.
Because they're super go USA. Yeah.
It's like people,
I don't know.
People, I don't know.
People who brought their kid to see Monsters Ball thinking it was.
Oh my God.
Monsters Inc.
Were they out at the same time?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's awkward. Yeah.
Oh.
You're like, wait a minute. There's somebody fucking a prostitute. Oh, wait a minute. Wrong movie. Jesus. But yeah, so anything. Kevin, did you see anything in theaters?
Zero Dark, Django, Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
Oh, Jack. Wait, have we talked about Jack Reacher?
Yeah, no, you haven't.
I think we. I don't know. I feel like we hung out outside of the podcast.
Yeah, talk about Jack Reacher. I don't think
Jack Reacher was awesome.
Yeah, I loved Jack Reacher. Wow. I want cannot sequels. Believe how much I love Jack
really?
Reacher.
Really?
It was
ridiculous. I'm curious.
It reminds me, I think we talked, it's like a Steve 70s
McQueen.
Throwback. Yeah, it's just Steve McQueen. Oh. It's like Bullet, but with more action.
Yeah. Wow.
Bullet with more punching in the throat.
Nice.
and an awesome car chase. It's a great car chase.
Yeah. And Tom Cruise is amazing. And like people were like, oh, he's too short to play this character. He's badass.
Okay.
It's all about presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a movie podcast, not a book podcast. So I'm guessing we don't have too many Lee Childs fans who are listeners. I don't know what the overlap is between Lee Childs fans and movie fans.
Hey.
But if they're all complaining about Tom Cruise playing this part, I started to read one of the Jack Reacher books. They're not very good. So I don't really care if they have a problem with him not looking like what Jack Reacher. Like, I'm like, this is, it's just really very rudimentary writing.
It was so fun. It was just a fun movie. He's rumored to be one of the guys up for Mission Impossible, Christopher McQuarrie, and I'm 100% behind that.
Definitely,
because Jack Reacher was fun, and it was a cool little tale. And Robert Duvall is amazing. If they could somehow tie Robert Duvall into Mission Impossible, I'd love that.
That'd be awesome.
All right. Anything else?
I saw Parental Guidance.
Uh-oh.
Oh my God!
Yeah, you did.
Because nobody gets better. So
did you have a?
Oh, okay. Look, so actually, hold on. I gotta backtrack before I get to Parental Guidance. I gotta backtrack a sec. So both times that you saw Zero Dark Thirty, was it at the ArcLight?
Yes.
Okay. See, in my hesitation to see for seeing movies,
Gen Pop,
predicated upon the fact that because I'm on MoviePass, I don't get to go to ArcLight where I know I'm gonna have a nice, respectful audience.
Yeah.
I have to go to an AMC where you get.
Yeah,
the AMC goers. I don't know. Yeah. I don't really know how else to say that.
Yeah.
So I understand.
Wow.
That,
ouch.
I went to the AMC to see Zero Dark Thirty.
Have you been to the AMC in the mall though?
No, I went to the Burbank.
It's like high schoolers. So watching Zero Dark Thirty with high schoolers, were just there
that
to watch.
That would be awful.
To watch like the live action version of
Mystery Science Theater,
Splinter Cell. Yeah. Well, it's like a video game.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Tank goes down. Like that's all. That's all. I could just hear them like. Visualizing a video game.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you have to take into account the audience at the theater you're going to.
That's true.
But anyway, back to Parental Guidance.
So you had a kid, it grew up to be 7 years old, and you took him to go see Parental
Guidance.
No,
it's worse than that. So again, this is all predicated upon my movie going being directed by the MoviePass theaters. So like MoviePass basically decides which theaters I can go to. One of the glitches in their system is for some reason you can't go to 3D movies. Like you can't get a ticket for a 3D movie.
At all.
Oh.
But sometimes it doesn't matter. Well, because as long as the theater has the 3D and the regular version, it doesn't matter. You can buy it for the regular version and they don't know any better. You can just get a ticket for the 3D version and you're good to go.
Oh.
But the problem was the theater I went to didn't have a non-3D version of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh.
So we had to go see Parental Guidance instead. Because I didn't want to sneak. So we went and saw Parental Guidance. And it was what it was. It's not a great movie, but I mean, I like Billy Crystal. He talks about baseball.
All right.
Oh my God.
Okay. Oh, I also saw Guilt Trip.
Oh.
Which was, now I heard that wasn't like as awful as it might seem.
I mean, they're both kind of par. Like, they're just not great. Like, they have funny moments, but it's just a weird, oh, hey, we're old now kind of movies.
Like, I love that genre.
Like, So we got these older comedians. They need to make a joke about Twitter and about tweeting and how they don't like it. And, like, it's Billy Crystal riffing on Twitter and raising kids the way people raise kids today. Mm. And, like, that's all the movies are.
So it's Sully from Monsters, Inc.
I believe he's Mike Wazowski.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So it's Mike just trashing Twitter.
All right.
All right.
I think that's it.
All right. Well, let's get into the stream of the week. What is anything on Netflix streaming that somebody likes? We got a couple of them today. So you start us off, Kev.
Blue Valentine.
Oh, that's on Netflix.
Is it the not rated version or is it the R version?
I didn't actually go. I just saw the picture and I was like, Blue Valentine's on Netflix. I got to watch it.
We got to look it up. Be careful. If it's R, then don't watch it.
Why?
Because then
what's the difference between them?
That's not the director's version.
It's probably the sex scene is cut down, right, I guess.
Which is not really graphic at all.
No, it wasn't. Like, they built it up so much. I was like,
yeah. Like, really, I wanted to see Bush. Fuck this.
But I would think it has to be the NC-17 because they have the unrated version of RoboCop on Netflix.
Yeah, they're not too crazy about censored stuff, right? I mean, outside of this aspect ratio shit.
No.
I mean, Irreversible's been on Netflix.
Yeah,
Irreversible forever.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure they're okay with whatever.
Yeah, they probably put the correct version.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And then you have a stream of the week as well.
Yeah, I got a couple. One would be an honorable mention, but I won't mention it because I'll mention it here. For my discoveries last year, this movie Author with Al Pacino and Tuesday Weld. Arthur Hiller movie. He's a playwright. Tuesday Weld is his wife, and they have some trouble, and he has some kids. And I don't want to give away too much, but it's a interesting little movie. It's a drama, and it's
was it a play before?
It
sounds familiar. Sounds like I've read the play.
It may have source material in a play. I should have researched that, but I'm not. I don't know. I liked it. I like Pacino in it, and the kids are good in it. And then I had two more that are basically like new discoveries for me this year already. So they would be on my next year's list. One of them's called Santa Fe Passage, and it's a Western with John Payne and Slim Pickens. Can't remember who else is in it, but Tarantino loves this director. His name's William Whitney. He's talked about him a lot. And it's just a cool little, wagon train kind of Western with some plot twists in it. It's like a B-Western, but it's good. I dug it. And then secondly, I just watched a movie called Rope of Sand, which is actually on Sean's Wick's picks is his discoveries from last year list. It's like it's set in, I think, Africa. I'm gonna fuck that up, but it's like a diamond mine area. And it's got Burt Lancaster, Paul Henreid, Claude Rains, and Peter Lorre. So you got like a Casablanca reunion, and basically it's just like a bunch of people in this diamondy area kind of, I don't know, just kind of fucking with each other. It's hard to boil down, but it's definitely worthwhile. It's a good little drama with a diamond mine area at the center of it.
I gotta check that out now.
Wait, and did you mention Faith Demerig is in Santa Fe Passage?
I did not.
From This Island Earth?
I totally missed that. Thank you for catching that.
One of my favorite Mystery Science Theater movies of all time.
That's pretty funny.
What is it again?
This Island Earth.
I gotta check it out. I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
We're in the tubes back here.
Yeah. I love any. I would watch This Island Earth with or without the MST3K gang in front of it because it's just silly.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome.
It's Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie. That's the movie that they watch as I hit my mic.
So there you go. It's three streams for you to watch on Netflix. I wish they sponsored us.
Oh my gosh, if Netflix sponsored us?
We have booths. And like servants coming,
nice,
yeah,
serving us like sushi, off of like. Never mind. I'm gonna get off track.
Next pick.
All right. So should we get into the list?
I think so.
Yeah, sure.
Brian, this is your list, so you shall have first crack at it.
Thank you. Okay, so my standard thing, I've got a tie at number 5.
Why wouldn't you?
Of course.
Yeah.
It's a thing now. So it's two sort of detective-y series movies. Two series that I got into last year were the Charlie Chan movies and the Sherlock Holmes with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. I only got to see one Sherlock Holmes. I'm getting into that more now. But the one Sherlock Holmes I got to see was The Scarlet Claw, which is it's pretty cool. I mean, it's like the synopsis is a woman is found dead with her throat torn out. Villagers blame a supernatural source, but Holmes has other ideas. So it's sort of I don't know. It's got like a it's just got that. It feels like it would be in line with like it felt like it should go with the Universal horror movie. I mean, it's Universal Pictures produced, and it feels like it could be right there with those Universal horror movies because there's a supernatural element to it. And those guys are just great. I mean, you can see why that series was so long running. They play really well together, and it's a neat little mystery, and totally had me engaged. I was surprised. And the other one is Charlie Chan at the Wax Museum. That was my favorite. I think I saw about 4 or 5 of the Charlie Chan movies last year, and they're pretty good. I think Charlie Chan at Treasure Island was pretty good, but this was my favorite. It was kind of like there's a sort of a whodunit at this wax museum, and what ends up happening is the killer is loose, and basically he is able to disguise himself as any of the other characters. So it's kind of like a John Carpenter's The Thing kind of. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he saw the movie, maybe not, but so it's got that element to it. You're just kind of like, oh, the killer is among us, and we don't know who it is, and we don't know a lot about some of these people, and the lights keep going out, and I don't know. It was a fun little whodunit. I really dug that one.
Nice. Oh, wow. I've never seen any Charlie Chan films, so I gotta check it out.
They're all right. They're interesting. Yeah.
My only point of reference for Charlie Chan is the Peter Sellers character in Murder by Death.
Which I still haven't seen. Which is ridiculous.
At least you have you can go off Charlie Chan now. I'm just like, I know who Charlie Chan is, but I know nothing about Charlie Chan. But I love Murder by Death.
I gotta see it. It's ridiculous. I haven't seen it.
It's pretty funny.
That's all that I've
Peter
heard.
Peter Falk.
I love him.
I wish if I could master one. Well, if I could master two impressions, it'd be Chris Walken and Peter Falk. Peter Falk has an awesome voice,
and then you could just do them having a conversation.
Yeah,
oh, that'd be good.
Jenny, what is your number 5?
Okay, so I'm gonna preface and say I'm way behind on movies in general. And so all of my movies are ones that are really popular that I just now watched within this past year.
Yeah.
And realized what an idiot I was for not seeing it sooner. So my number 5 on that note was Scrooged. I finally saw Scrooged. Nice. It was my first Christmas movie of the year this year. It was like the week after Thanksgiving, and I was like, you know what? I'm finally going to watch Scrooged. And I liked it. Of course I liked it. I mean, it's Bill Murray, and why wouldn't I like it? For those who don't know, it's the Christmas Carol version with Bill Murray in it, and it's like the 80s version of it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. It's a little dirty. It's like R.
It's fun. It's dark. It's dirty. Is it Richard Donner?
I thought it was like 80s PG.
80s PG.
It is PG-13.
See?
They should be. Today it would be R.
They swear a lot, and it was supposed to be a lot darker.
It was supposed to be
a lot darker.
I believe it.
It's great.
It is.
I love all the everybody shows up in this movie. Alfred Woodard plays his assistant.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm just blank. I mean, of course, his Brian Doyle Murphy is in it as his dad, mm-hmm. and then his brother plays his brother John Murphy. Yeah,
of Moving Violations fame.
Yes. Who else? The guy plays the LA guy who's in Gremlins 2, whose name I always forget.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy. What?
He's really good, but he's just like that. You can see that the writer might be a little bit resentful of LA people based on his representation of the douchey LA guy.
Robert Mitchum.
Robert Mitchum.
Holy shit, I forgot about him. Lee Majors. Sorry.
Lee Majors.
What is it? The Night the Reindeer Died?
The Night the Reindeer Died.
That's such a great opening. that to me demonstrates the darkness that they were probably going for, and then maybe they veer away from it. But it's right in the beginning. So I'm like, this is going to be dark. Yeah.
They're Robert Goulet's Down Home Cajun Christmas. Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
I haven't seen this in a long time. I should watch it.
Oh, it's
so it was good. On HBO Go. That's how I watched it. Yeah.
His pitch or whatever, his commercial for Scrooge, where it's like acid rain, terrorism, freeway killings. So good.
Oh, I did see it's supposed to be on Netflix like February 1st or something.
Oh, really?
It's supposed to get on Netflix. Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's how they roll.
Not to
diss our possible hopeful sponsor, but seriously, after they Halloween, all late, the horror movies
like
come
discounted
out.
Movies.
After Christmas, all the Christmas
so they get the discounted
out.
Rate.
Yeah.
Bargain bin digital.
Yeah. Yeah, because everybody's like Amazon Prime, you know, pimps that out and stuff like that. And then here comes Netflix a month late to the party. Very cool. So that was from what year? 88. All right. My number five is from 1987. Very close.
Nice.
But it is Batteries Not Included.
Oh, wow.
What? You've never seen Batteries Not Included?
Okay, so this is one of my cheats. I had seen it as when I was a kid. Like probably 87, I probably went to the theater to see this. But I didn't remember anything about it. Anything. I just remember little gizmos.
And all I really remember is the cheeseburger robot.
Yeah.
Cheese gets baked on the burger. Robot. That's really all and some cheesy plot about
so there's a tenement building and the guy wants, I watch the movie all the time. There's a tenement building and the guy wants them to clear it out. He's trying to get them to clear out the residence. But I love my favorite story because there's all these, it's kind of like Cocoon because all the older people.
Yeah, totally.
But there's a story where the woman who's got Alzheimer's and she starts to think that the guy, like the punk guy who's supposed to clear them all out, is her son. Mm-hmm. And I love that story. That's one of my favorite stories in the movie.
Well, and Jessica Tandy plays that part so well.
Yes.
Oh, I totally forgot she was in it. I bought this movie for my little girl and we just haven't gotten her on it
yet. And little known fact, it was one of the screenwriters was Brad Bird.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, oh my God.
Early Brad Bird credit. But yeah, it's really fun. These little they're aliens, but they're kind of like robots, basically. And they come and they help this building kind of not get demolished. It's really cool. It's really cool. For the longest time when I was a kid, when I was a little younger, I thought it was Forrest Whitaker as the main
That's
actor.
Racist.
I know.
Who is it? Because I kind of thought
Frank McCray.
But I always pictured Forrest Whitaker in this.
Yeah. From Used Cars and... Yeah, he's awesome. I love that guy.
And I want to say he plays the
Oh, he's the captain.
He's the captain in
right?
Last
yes.
Action Hero.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh yes,
he's
yes.
so good in that.
Yeah.
I love that guy a lot.
Check that out. 1987, Batteries Not Included, and
that'd be a good double feature. Batteries Not Included in Cocoon.
Yeah. So that is my number five.
Okay. So I'm going to preface this by saying that I suck as a cinephile, and my list is going to be pretty bad. I didn't watch a lot of old movies this year at all.
I feel like we should change the title of this episode to the preface episode.
Yeah. Kevin just watched a lot of vintage porn, but forgot to...
Yeah.
Well, that's we were talking about this on the way over here. We both watched a lot of TV this last year. Mm.
Yeah.
A lot of TV, and I just rewatched a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number five is from 1961, and it's The Innocents. With Deborah Kerr.
That's a cool one.
I like it because I've been really trying to study atmosphere as a filmmaker and writer, and it's perfect for that. I mean, it's a scary movie, and it's all about the tone that the director sets. The plot is Deborah Kerr's hired as a governess for two children whose uncle doesn't really have time for them because he likes to go around partying and traveling and doesn't really care for the kids. And while she's there, she starts learning all these dark secrets and kind of feels that the place is haunted and then that there's something bad that's going to happen to the children. And it's really creepy. And anything with children in a scary movie is always creepy. And the kids are great. And Deborah Kerr's awesome. But it's just a really good. And for a black and white movie without like cheap thrills, it's very creepy.
Yeah, I put it only second to maybe like The Haunting as far as scary black and white. And The Uninvited. Those are the three scary black and white movies for me, but
definitely
isn't The Others basically just a remake of it, or
yeah, pretty that's, kind of yeah.
I couldn't remember if it was exactly
I mean they change it up a little bit, but yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, very cool. I remember this, watching The Others and being like, I feel like I've seen this movie before. and yeah Who directed the others? It was like a big time. It was like a foreign director. This was
It was the guy who did like The Sea Inside and.
Yes, yes. That was like his first American film, I think.
Right? Alejandro Ambanar. Or something like that.
All right, so where are we at, Adam?
My number five. Okay, now I'm questioning whether I want to do this as my number five.
Uh oh.
Whatever. Fuck it. I don't care. So. I mean, because we're doing Discoveries. I've been waiting for this movie for such a long time. It's from 2007, and it's called The Shark Is Still Working.
Oh, nice.
And it came out, and it had, like, previews, but then it mysteriously disappeared. And it took me a while to realize, oh, hey, maybe Universal's bought it up so they could put it on the Blu-ray of Jaws for the anniversary edition, which they did. So, I mean, this was the first official release, but I've been waiting to see it since 2007. Like, I'm just anxiously awaiting to see The Shark Is Still Working. And it was worth the wait. I loved it.
Yeah.
If you haven't got the Jaws Blu-ray, go buy it just for The Shark Is Still Working. Because it's great.
It's on the special edition DVD?
Well, first off, so. I mean, just buy the Blu-ray. It's Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I mean, why are you questioning?
I have a Laserdisc version of it, okay?
Not The Shark Is Still Working.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And the Laserdisc is probably nowhere near the quality of the Blu-ray.
I think it's got the full 2-hour documentary, right? They fixed that with a 30th anniversary edition.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It wasn't before, but...
Yeah.
So it's got that
all
and
the special features.
That's good stuff.
Plus The Shark Is Still Working, which I love because I love Jaws. And it's just everybody want to hear talk about Jaws talking about Jaws. And they just go... like they talk about fans and they talk to directors who've been influenced by Jaws. They talk to the couple who bought... the editor's old house and how they have all of her editing equipment still back there. It's great. It's really interesting. If you like Jaws, you should check it out.
Yes. You know what Jaws could have used? A little Herzog. Me as a villain. Me as Quinn.
With no fingers.
With no fingers, yeah. But yeah, so that very cool. I got to check that documentary out. Where are we at? Down to Brian.
Okay, my number four, this is one I had meant to see for a long time. I'd actually bought the DVD when it came out and then sold it and never watched it and had to get it again. It's from 1973. It's called The Last of Sheila. It is, the plot synopsis is, a year after Sheila is killed in a hit and run, her multimillionaire husband invites a group of friends to spend a week on his yacht playing a scavenger hunt style mystery game. The game turns out to be all too real and all too deadly.
Uh-oh.
This is written by Stephen Sondheim and Anthony Perkins, who I guess in real life were very much into games and doing this kind of thing. Not necessarily killing people, but definitely putting on elaborate games and scavenger hunts and things like that. So, but the cast is pretty ridiculous for a 70s movie. It's Richard Benjamin, Diane Cannon, James Coburn, Joan Hackett, James Mason, Ian McShane, and Raquel Welch as the primaries. And it's just a really neat sort of, Agatha Christie type thing.
Oh, okay.
But it plays, if you like those actors, I mean, for me, it's just, if you put all those actors in a movie, I'm kind of halfway to liking it anyway. And it's just really well put together. And the mystery, the twist, I didn't see coming personally, but.
Is it like Murder on the Orient Express kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's just, it's an interesting little, like I said, just like a whodunit.
It's been in my Netflix queue for such a ridiculously long time. I feel bad for not having seen it yet. Because it's just sitting there. It's been there. Hasn't really moved.
I think it's pretty great. If you like those actors, I think...
It's streaming?
It was maybe at one point, but I don't think it... I think the DVD's actually even out of print now. So Netflix disc might be the only way
Ian
to get
McShane
it.
Is in this?
Yeah, very young Ian McShane.
That's weird.
That's where he dropped his first cocksucker. Very cool. I gotta check
back
that out.
When you could, back in 1973, when you could say cocksucker in a PG movie.
I know. Well, you know, one would, you know,
you got three cocksuckers.
Yeah. Well, you get to say four, then you got an R rating. Okay.
No. Then they're just like, all right, well,
they give you.
We'll
one
let it slide.
Yeah.
Because they didn't care.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the guy that's in American Horror Story now.
Yeah.
He's fucking creepy as shit.
Yes. Have you seen Deadwood?
No.
Watch Deadwood.
Yeah, I want to.
Yeah.
Is he creepy in that too?
He's awesome.
He's just amazing.
He's just badass.
He could be categorized as creepy in that too, though.
No, it's true. Swear absolutely. No, you're totally right.
He's a creepy
badass.
Creepy badass. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. I got to check that out. I really am into whodunits, so.
Yeah, that was last year was definitely a mystery year for me. I watched a lot of mystery movies and that one definitely stood out.
Jenny.
All right. So my number four is one I saw recently actually and talked about it recently. Pan's Labyrinth. Awesome. Finally saw it.
The one you didn't know was in Spanish.
I didn't know it was in
You're
Spanish.
You're like, reading? What?
I was like, let's watch a fun movie that just can be on in the background. No. Nope. Nope. I had no idea. I don't know why I didn't know, because Del Toro is, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You put this on in the back of like a children's Halloween party.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
There's nothing like seeing a guy's face smashed
totally
in with a bottle.
Kids.
Well, it was yeah. Easter time.
Oh.
You loved it?
Oh, like yeah, I really liked it. I like the whole part where it's like old, it's from old times. I can't think of the word. I'm not very good with words today. It takes place in an older time, and then it also has that whole fantasy part too, but that's on the side. And so it's like two different worlds.
Yeah.
And I like seeing.
I think the problem is you don't have any booze in your drink.
I don't. It's just Coke. It's just Coke.
You and Kevin are the only ones not drinking.
You were out of beer.
Well, there was been plenty of booze. It's because it's a period piece, but it also
and fantasy. Both are done so well that it matches fine together. Like it seems like it fits, and it shouldn't. You know, like if you explained it to someone, they would be like, "What? That doesn't make any sense." But it fits really well. Yeah. And the colors are fantastic, and the cinematography, everything about it. I loved it.
Yeah, if you mentioned, like, where does this take? Well, it takes place during the Franco, era. And it's like, what? And it's a fantasy movie?
Yeah, it's weird.
You have to be very particular about how you describe the movie, because I got punched in the arm because I described it. Oh, it's kind of fairy tale-ish. And I left out the horror movie part.
Right.
I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, someone was really upset with me when the fairies get eaten. I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah, my God,
It's fairy / horror / period piece.
Yeah. Tale get eaten horror movie.
I told it to my dad, and he let my nieces watch it.
Oh, my God. So
they were upset when someone got their face bashed in. But yeah, this is a fun movie. And I think that's why I like The Devil's Backbone so much, is because it is like a period piece horror movie, and it just makes it a little creepier sometimes.
Yeah, I still think that's his best movie to date, personally.
Yeah.
But
Devil's Backbone?
No, actually Pan's. Okay. I like Pan's a little better than Devil's Backbone, personally. But
no, yeah, I would totally agree with that.
We're both good.
Blade 2, guys.
Wait, before you do your number 4, is anybody as bummed as me that Kaufman and him are not doing Slaughterhouse 5?
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know they were considering doing it.
I didn't
know
that they had
actually
been working on it, and now it's not going to happen.
I just feel like I hear so many rumors about movies that he's making. Like
But this was actually on Kaufman's website.
Oh, okay. Well, the new thing I heard was that he's still trying to get At the Mountains of Madness made.
Yeah, I heard he's going to repitch. I just saw that today.
Yeah.
Talking about.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right.
But no Star Wars 7.
No. I would want to see Star Wars 7 directed by Joe Carnahan. I don't know why.
What?
Because it'd be like a shoot-em-up.
Yeah.
It'd be
really bleak.
And Liam Neeson would still be in it.
Yeah, I'd see a really fucking bleak Star Wars.
Yeah, and also like Frank Grillo would come out with the first Jedi with the tattoo. And with an alcohol problem.
The first Star Wars where someone says fuck.
Yeah. He's like, Qui-Gon, you're a fucking cocksucker. You gotta kill these AT-ATs. But yeah.
And then Jason Patrick shows up and just runs through this scene all go down.
Yes.
He's got a goatee. He's wearing like a Hawaiian themed like Jedi robe.
Oh man, he's all hopped up on Bantha Poodoo.
It'd be amazing, dude.
Oh man, that is nerdy.
I'm ready. I want to see it.
And it all takes place in Hoth because it's snowing.
It's all Hoth,
and it's the Millennium Falcon like crash landed there. You have to survive.
It's the most depressing Star Wars movie ever.
All right, so my number 4 is a movie by Gregory Nava from 1983 called El Norte.
And I've always meant to see that.
It's really cool. It's on Criterion now. I got the Blu-ray. Got it from my dad because it was one of my dad's favorite movies, and then I eventually watched it, and it's really cool. It's basically, it's an interesting story. It's a group of Guatemalan, like a brother and sister, and they basically have to, like, there's this, like, this whole guerrilla thing going on in Guatemala at the time, and they want to get to the U.S., and they all the shit they go through, I won't say, but they gotta, like, they gotta, they're illegal immigrants in more than one country. You know what I mean? Like, they gotta cross into Mexico and then cross into the U.S. And it's a very interesting story. And then once they get here, it's kind of like, yeah, you, the American dream is alive and well, but it's not as easy as, you know, as you think. And it's really kind of, I like how it's kind of a bleak ending. But it's really well made. It's one of Gregory Nava's early movies. He went on to do, like, I think he did, like, Mi Familia, and he does a lot of, like, Hispanic-themed movies. But this was on Criterion, and my dad had it sitting there, and I'm like, I gotta check it out.
This I think this movie is a perfect example of how IMDb's More Like This feature tells you everything you need to know about a movie without reading anything actually about the movie. The recommended titles are Blood Diamond, Failsafe, and Lord of the Flies.
Wow.
Wow.
So, cheery.
Yeah. It's an upbeat movie. You know, if you're feeling down, you watch this movie, and it'll make you feel all better inside.
When they get there to America, they get to, like, Hollywood, right? And everything's fun and happy.
Yeah.
And they do a dance.
Yeah. The creepiest scene is when they're trying to smuggle into the U.S., and they have to go through this sewer, this, like, pipe sewer, and there's a rat scene. Yeah. It's one of the creepiest things I've ever seen, and there's a shit ton of rats in that scene. And something else happens, but I won't spoil it. But check it out. It's on Criterion if you want to check that out. My number four, El Norte.
Okay. So my number four is from 1954, and it's Johnny Guitar. It's a Western with Joan Crawford and Sterling Hayden. And it's directed by Nicholas Ray. And I think that's the reason why I watched it, because he directed In a Lonely Place, which is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And I knew nothing about the film. I think I just recorded it off of TCM, watched it, and I just loved it. I love Joan Crawford in this film. She's so badass because she just plays this strong-willed woman who's kind of on the outskirts of the West, and she's in charge. She runs her own saloon, and she doesn't take shit from anybody. But she has this soft side to her, and because you kind of get to see ex-lovers, Sterling Hayden being one of them, and you just kind of get to see how she is with them. But then she goes back to being this badass woman who just won't let anybody fuck with her. And then Sterling Hayden, who I've always seen him and stuff, but I think this year seeing him in a bunch of movies and seeing him play different things, I've just fallen in love with him as an actor because he's just phenomenal. But the film's really good. It's different for a Western. I mean, having a strong willed woman in a Western who is, like, in charge of all these men and just won't take crap from any of these men, especially, like, her ex-lover, who's this criminal who does try to treat her like crap. And then a bunch of people don't like her because she's like that. So they, when something goes wrong, they all blame it on her. But it's a really good movie. Nicholas Ray does a great job.
Nicholas Ray, I could always remember him because he's the dude with the eye patch. He's the director with the eye patch.
Raoul Walsh, too.
Really?
Yeah, both eye patch. Actually, Walsh, and I think, who's the guy that directed House of Wax? Andre de Toth. I think they're all eye patch guys.
Really?
He has one eye and he directed a 3D movie.
Exactly. I know, it's funny.
He's like, what do you think? Looks great, man.
I mean, I could be wrong with that, but I'm pretty sure that was something that always stood out to me, was that he's a one-eyed man doing a 3D movie. But yeah, Scorsese's a huge Johnny Guitar fan. I think... I remember I had a VHS tape of it where there was a series where he did a bunch of little introductions.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I don't think it's on the DVD, but I think I have the introduction VHS part of it taped somewhere. But that came out on Blu-ray this year, and I bought that from Olive Films. Yeah, it's a really cool sort of role reversal Western.
It is. Thing, you it's know? Very cool.
Because Mercedes McCambridge is also kind of a badass lady in it. And it's really Joan Crawford versus Mercedes McCambridge, and
yeah,
it's good stuff. I like that movie. But yeah, Scorsese's a huge fan.
Speaking of women in charge, I just watched Steel Dawn. Have you guys seen that
with Patrick Swayze?
Yeah,
I haven't seen that in a long time, dude. I know it's on Netflix Instant. It's in my cube and meaning to rewatch it.
That's a good recommendation.
I barely remember it.
If you're a fan of Swayze, you're gonna love this post-apocalyptic movie.
I'm definitely a fan of Swayze.
Yeah. All right. And what was yours called again? I gotta put it on my list.
Johnny Guitar.
Johnny Guitar. Not to be confused with Johnny Be Good.
Yes. Also good.
Also
really
good.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. Shit. I just saw that, too. Hold with on. Robert I gotta redo my
put
list.
That on your list.
Robert Downey and Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah.
All right.
Hold on.
I had to add something that...
Johnny Be Good?
No, something else to my honorable mention. Sorry, we're number four.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number four is from 1976, Who Can Kill a Child? I finally saw it.
I own the fucking movie. And
Bruce Willis.
I've heard about it for a couple years.
Well, you have a large room full of unopened movies.
I know.
So that's, I mean, I understand.
This is one I've always sort of been like, I'm in the mood to watch that tonight.
Well, it's, you think you're in the mood to watch it until you start. So you have to, okay.
I've heard nothing but great things.
It's a great movie, but again, this is the preface episode, so I must preface this movie by saying that it opens up with just this documentary footage and just text talking about like genocide and child murders. So like when I first put it on, I'm like, I'm not ready to watch this right now. Like I know what it's about, but you're hitting me with this reality up front. And the director even said in the making of stuff on the DVDs, like, I probably should have put that at the end of the movie. And I agree with him. He should have put it at the end of the movie because it's just really like, oh, Holocaust. Yeah, I was ready to watch just a straight up horror movie about kids killing people, and you're hitting me with the Holocaust first. It's a little heavy. I was mentally prepared. I wasn't quite to that level yet. Like I was in like orange, and I needed to be in red.
Oh, wow.
You know, like threat level.
Well, it's like you don't expect that. Like you're like, well, the Holocaust is pretty grim unto itself, and they're like, "Whoa, wait."
Well, you know, wait, well, so you have seen it?
No, I'm just saying that it just sounds grim.
Oh, okay. Well, see, the thing is, so it starts, and you're like, "All right, well, I see what they're going for. They're showing a little bit of the Holocaust, but then they go into like African Holocaust, and then they go into like they just it's a 5-7 minutes long. Like it's not just like, oh, hey, here's a blurb. It's like no, it's we're gonna drill this home right at the beginning, just so you know where we're coming from. But after that, it's crazy, silly Italian, Spanish village fun with kids killing people.
But it's no X-Men, just beginning X-Men. It's not.
No,
real quick. Hey,
no,
we're
not
out.
Real quick. He doesn't explain mutation right away.
It takes a while.
He belabors the point.
Wow.
But then it turns into this couple who show up at a village where all the adults are dead and the children are killing everyone.
Wow.
And that part is fun.
I just saw a trailer for this movie. Coming out soon, and it sounds a lot like this.
Well, they remade it.
Oh, and that's it. That's it.
I'm guessing that's what.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. They go to this like weird, like tropical island, and there's only kids there.
Yes.
And they're fucking freaky, man.
Yes. That sounds about right.
And they go to the beach, and there's nothing but kids just hanging out there.
Yeah. Yep. So no one else has seen this movie.
No.
All right. Well, you maybe next year this will be on your movie. Your 2013 discoveries.
Or favorite. Remakes.
Or favorite remakes.
Once the remake comes out. All right. So that is your number four?
My number four.
Yes. All right. Three. Brian.
Okay. My number three. One of my favorite contributors to this series is this guy, Zach Carlson. He's one of the programmers at the Draft House in Austin, Texas. He does Terror Tuesday. He's a horror movie guy for the most part. But he always gets a really interesting, eclectic list. And his list last year had this movie on it. Which is part of the reason I'd been meaning to see it. It was weird. I actually have a weird history with this movie. I taped it a couple times off TCM where the ending got cut off. And so when I knew the ending was cut off, I'm like, fuck that. I can't even watch this. So I'm going to have to wait until, because it wasn't on DVD until I think last year they put it out MOD, which is how I got to see it. Anyway, it's called 1,000 Clowns and it's from 1965. It's got Jason Robards, Barbara Harris, Martin Balsam, William Daniels. The plot synopsis on IMDb is a middle-aged iconoclast, that's Robards, doggedly avoiding the tedium of employment and conventional life, faces the prospect of losing custody of his young ward. So yeah, basically he's sort of, I guess you might call him sort of a bohemian dude. I mean, it's really interesting sort of establishment versus anti-establishment literalization where, you know, he's sort of looking after this kid, and then the I don't know if it's like child services, but that sort of thing comes by and basically are trying to tell him he's not qualified. And he's like, why am I not qualified? Because I don't work. Why is that such a, so it's this really interesting sort of examination of, you know, why do we work? And, you know, because we feel like we have to. I mean, it's not like I'm anti-work, but it's just an interesting, it's just an interesting take, you know? I mean, it seems a little hippie-ish, pre-hippie kind of in some ways, really? But and that usually annoys the shit out of me. But for some reason, this doesn't. I don't know why. It just was an interesting meditation on life and how you choose to spend your life and, you know, what family is and, you know, I don't know. It was just a really touching and thought-provoking movie for me.
And Jason Robart is the lead in this?
Yeah, he's the lead. He's great. He's really
good. Wow. Oh, wow. I'm looking at the cover now.
Yep.
Very interesting. I got to check this out.
Yeah.
Can't imagine him as a hippie-ish.
He's really not. It's not like long hair hippie, but just a sort of, it's sort of a slightly bohemian mentality.
Oh, okay.
You know, maybe before that was what you would have even called it. You know, just like I said, anti-establishment versus establishment.
Very cool. Gotcha. And this is on VOD?
It's on MOD from MGM. It's on the MGM MOD DVDs.
And
you can just get it on Amazon.
Are they doing Blu-rays now too, or no?
I know Warner Archive's doing actual Blu-rays. They aren't Burns real Blu-rays, but they. I don't think any other studios have jumped into that yet. I hope they do. Wow.
Yeah, because it sucks now. Because you're like, why would I want a fucking DVD now?
I know. Yeah, I agree.
All right, Jennifer.
Okay.
Hold on. You're like, well, let me pull up my list.
Okay. So my number three is 1963's Charade.
Nice.
I finally saw that one. I love Audrey Hepburn. I'm one of those girls that just, you know, loves everything she does. And this shows her comedic side so well. And I love that because when you look at her, you wouldn't think she even had any comedic side to her at all. But this movie, I love it. It's for those that don't know, it's a romance and suspense in Paris as a woman is pursued by several men who want a fortune her murdered husband had stolen. Who can she trust? So, it's really interesting. It's, she's going through trying to find the money herself and then trying to hide it from people that want it and trying to figure out who is on her side. And she's also kind of, tricking, I guess, all the other people too.
Oh, conning?
Conning, yeah. She's conning them as well. And yeah, conning, that's the word. So, and it's really interesting.
I love that this movie is billed as the best Hitchcock movie that Hitchcock never made.
Yep.
That's
very Hitchcock.
That's funny because for the longest time I thought it was Hitchcock.
Yeah. I actually had it was funny. One of my best friends, we were at a bar when I was in college, and this girl that was a friend of his, not the girl he was dating, but she brought up Charade and said Hitchcock directed it. And I sort of just offhandedly was like, no, I don't think he did. And my buddy was just so. he wanted to challenge her for some reason at this. So he's like, there was a video store literally next door. He's like, let's go look it up. And I was just like, I'm not usually the kind of person that pursues that sort of thing. I was just like, I know he didn't, but that's fine. We'll just let it go. But he was really ready to go next door and show her that it wasn't him. Wow. But it totally feels like him. I get it.
Did she break his heart or something?
No, I think he just, I don't know, they had an adversarial, flirtatious relationship. I don't know.
It was a David Matty kind of thing.
Yeah. There you go. Absolutely. Always boils down to that.
When I was a kid, I used to think this movie was called Charade. I don't know why.
I mean, in France, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The great film, Charade. Very cool.
It was on Netflix for a while. It might still be.
Surprising that you...
It is. Like, it's still on there.
What made you watch this? Because it was Audrey?
Maybe it was during our... I don't know. Did we bring it up during our spy movies or something? Maybe. Maybe not
we
spy
might have.
Movies.
Maybe, yeah.
Did we mention Wait Until Dark? Have you seen that one yet?
I haven't seen that one.
You should wait until dark.
Okay.
She plays a blind woman.
Oh, really?
It's another one where it feels like it could have been a Hitchcock movie. Little bit.
Alan Arkin is creepy as fuck.
Yeah, it goes way darker than most Hitchcock movies. Yeah. But
that's cool.
I actually, one that I left off my honorable mentions is Love in the Afternoon with her and
Gary Cooper.
Yeah, I know Cameron Crowe's a big fan of that one. It's a Billy Wilder movie that I had, for some ridiculous reason, not seen. But
I need to go through and watch all of her old stuff.
If you like her, you totally dig it. It's pretty cool.
Funny Face, I think, just actually came on streaming.
I watched that last year, too. I wasn't as big a fan of that one, but that's definitely worth looking at if you like her.
Yeah.
Cool. I need to see Roman Holiday still, too. That's one that I have yet to see.
Absolutely.
It wasn't on Netflix for a while, though, so I couldn't watch it. But.
Charade. 1963.
Yeah.
Well, my movie's from 1952. My number three? Are we three?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is a movie directed by Eli Kazan. And... Okay, I'll have to. This is one of my favorite Marlon Brando performances, and it is Viva Zapata, directed by Louis Kazan.
I haven't seen that.
And actually written by John Steinbeck.
Yeah.
Script, and it's really interesting. It's Marlon Brando and Anthony Quinn and Gene Peters, and all these people playing Mexicans. So they're really tanned in the movie, but it's basically about the guy who led the revolution against, you know, the corrupt government at the time that was ruling Mexico, and Anthony Quinn plays Marlon Brando's brother, and I thought it was really, really well done, and it's one of my favorite performances of his because it's very subdued, very subtle, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I think I'd seen it a long time ago. Again, it's one of those movies that my dad owned on VHS, and I became kind of snobby when I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna wait for the DVD to come out. And I finally watched it last year.
I like how you get pouty when you get snobby.
Sure. I don't want to say that. I don't say that. And I finally watched it, and it was really fun. And it was cool because I'm kind of making my way back and doing the like the Kazan thing. So there's a lot of like later Kazan that I haven't seen.
Have you seen A Face in the Crowd? I think that's my favorite.
What is that?
Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith, yeah.
It's a little bit like Network, kind of.
This was in his later years, right? This is more recent?
I want to say 50s, but
sounds about right.
Really?
I could be wrong about that.
I have not seen this. Oh, no, I read about this.
So good.
Because Andy Griffith's like playing like a really like serious role, right?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen this.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, so that's on my list.
Yeah, that's highly recommended.
Of Kazan films to watch. It's really funny. If there's a what's his name's in this? Alan Reed is in this. So Alan Reed, if you don't know, he's the voice of Fred Flintstone.
Oh, that's
so
weird.
It's really funny hearing Fred Flintstone.
That's so weird.
So yeah, you could, if you really listen, you're like, that sounds like fucking Fred Flintstone playing the Mexican. And yeah. So, if you're wanting to know, what would Fred Flintstone sound like with kind of like a Mexican accent? Well, head on over and watch Viva Zapata. So.
I think we talked about the whole movies they made us watch in history class when we did the Based on a True Story episode. This was one of those movies where I felt like I was the only person in class enjoying the movie.
Really? I never saw this. Why did you see this?
Yeah.
We watched it in school.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it. But, and I love, this is one of my favorite, as far as Elia Kazan being a brilliant slash devious director, where he would take Brando and Anthony Quinn aside and tell each one, the other one said that their performance as Stanley Kowalski was shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucked up, man.
Yeah.
But you got the performances that you wanted.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know about that type of directing. Like, just where you turn people against each other on set.
It's like the emotional scars.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if we can do that.
Yeah, because I don't think Quinn and Brando talked after this movie.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I think
yeah.
they hated each other.
Yeah. Brando hated a lot of people.
Well.
So. He didn't talk to a lot of people after movies. But yeah, so that is from 1952. And it's Kazan, so it's fun. All right.
Okay, so from here on out, my list is all...
erotic thrillers.
Yep.
Yes.
You know it. We're all movie recommendations from Adam. Yep. My number three, I'm going to do it as a three-way tie. But it's Factotum, Barfly, and Bukowski Born into This.
Oh, wow. I win.
Yes. He wins. He does. Cause they're all awesome in their own way. And I'm a huge Bukowski fan, and that's what, why Adam gave these. He actually lent them to me to watch them because I love Bukowski, and I mean, I knew of Factotum, and I had heard people say, "Oh, blah blah blah," who were Bukowski fans who complained. And then I watch it, and Dylan captures what I pictured in my head of Chinaski while reading the books.
Now, what order did you go in?
So I did the order that Adam suggested. So I did.
I think I said chronological order.
Okay.
So, Barfly.
Barfly, Bukowski, Born into This, and then Factotum.
Okay.
Factotum is definitely my favorite. It's so good because it captures the way I felt the book would feel if you were to make a movie. When I'm reading the book, it captured exactly what I pictured in my head. And very rarely do people do that.
Factotum is streaming too, by the way.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Just bumped it up. I know we talked about that last time I was here. I've been meaning to check that out.
Yeah.
Do you like it better than Barfly too?
Well, they're just very.
I love Barfly.
I do love Barfly. They're very different movies.
Yeah,
they're it's we talked about that. Yeah, it's they're very different. It depends on which version of Chinaski I'm in the mood for. If I'm in, like, if I'm interested for the more, like, I think Ricardo would prefer Factotum to Barfly because of the stillness.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
Bent Hammer, his shots. He's like these wonderful still, and even his moving shots. There's just like a fluidity to them, and the way that he plays, like the smoke, because everyone's smoking in the bars, and the smoke that he uses.
I mean, it's almost like in a way, it's like a painting. He captures like these beautiful photographs, and it really just helps accentuate the film. Barfly, I love Barfly, and that came out of nowhere, and I was like, well, I had heard that Bukowski wasn't really a big fan of Barfly, and then I watched him like, this is great. And Mickey Rourke is awesome. He's playing a different version than I picture in my head, but he's awesome as Chinaski. And then Bukowski, Born Into This, was great because it's finally actually getting to see Bukowski and seeing how he is Henry Chinaski and how he's so much of that character and how he was this troubled soul, but he was a lover and he was just a very passionate person and kind of messed up.
Gotta check those out. Damn it.
Yeah.
Well, I should have just left him here.
I know, dude. Tell me you for taking him.
Factotum is like the still more poetic look at it. And then Barfly, Barbara Schroeder just gets right down in the gutter. And it's the grimy.
Yes, it's like the very
greasy,
grimy.
Bukowski. It's like, it reminds me of in American Splendor when Harvey and Joyce meet for the first time, and she's talking about how she's not sure about what he's going to look like because of the way different artists draw him.
Yeah.
It's like that as far as the way different directors depict Bukowski.
Yeah.
It's different looks at the same character. And that's what's really interesting about watching them together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
But it is, like you said, very grimy because while you're watching it, you almost feel kind of dirty. But when you're reading some of his books, you kind of feel that exact way. And so.
Damn. That's a good trifecta. I was like, what three movies tied it? What's a three-way tie? But that makes sense. I dig.
And so we're on number three?
Yes.
And I also have a tie. But not a three-way, just a two-way tie. and then these are also borrowed from someone else. I think, I don't know if he had both of these, but they were inspired by Rick Maddox.
Okay.
I watched Rio Bravo and Stagecoach for the first time.
Oh. Nice.
And I loved them both. I was never a John Wayne fan as a kid. I was always Clint Eastwood. But
me too.
I feel like now that I've grown up, I have appreciation for him more. And I just love these movies. Like warts and all. Like not as far as the filmmaking, but as far as questionable representations of the Native Americans.
Yeah, that's hard.
They're really entertaining. And they both inspired me as far as my own writing for other stories that I'm interested in telling. Just the way that Rio Bravo, I love the whole Dean Martin.
His storyline is fantastic. The
Dean Martin, John Wayne team up. Yeah. He's just got some great lines. Like when he comes in and he's like, you losers can keep what's on the table. It's John Wayne.
Well, dude, I mean, not to spoil anything for Django, but I mean, you know, Tarantino loves Rio Bravo.
Yep.
It's one of his favorites. It's maybe my second favorite movie of all time. I love it. But the Shooting Dynamite he's totally stole that straight out of Rio Bravo.
For him.
I mean, there's like the taxi driver bit and the Shooting Dynamite. The taxi driver with the...
Yeah,
the gun.
Sorry. Anyway, but those were two that stood out. I was like, that's really cool. I know he loves Taxi Driver. I know he loves Rio Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad he put that in there.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic movie, dude.
Dean Martin's performance is you feel like you're going through withdrawal with him, and he's just fantastic.
Yeah.
Dean Martin, not a real big drinker in real life. he used to put apple juice in his drinks
on stage.
Yeah, and he would call the cops on his own parties.
Oh wow, that's awesome!
Like when he wanted to go to sleep, he just call the cops and be like, "These guys, Dean Martin's having a party. It's way too loud." And there's cops are shopping. He's like, "Oh, guys, got to break it up." And he didn't look like the dick. So.
But Dean Martin, I just feel like you would know. It was like Dean, we know it's you.
Yeah. Like, no, it's not me, officer. Very cool.
So yeah, those are my tie for number three, Stagecoach and Rio Bravo. I love just the finally seeing, I guess, the source, at least in my mind, the source of the whole, the cavalry comes in to save the day. I'm like, okay, I get it. Cause like as a kid growing up watching cartoons, you're like, oh, the cavalry comes in, but this is, I feel like the beginning of that for me. I don't know. Maybe there's probably a movie before that, but this is like
the classic iconic moment, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah. I love Stagecoach. I think it might be almost my favorite Ford movie. He's done a lot of great stuff. Although My Darling Clementine's pretty amazing, but Stagecoach is like, I always say it's like for me the grandfather of the modern disaster movie, because it's just like, you know, yeah, you've got the ensemble cast, you've got the threat, in this case the Native American attack, but it really, that group in peril scenario really starts with that movie for mm-hmm. me. And that's, I love disaster movies, so it's kind of like I can't not love it.
Yeah.
I was really, I mean, I started thinking I needed to see it once it came out on Criterion. I'm like, all right, well, it was on Criterion, I should probably check it out. But then after Rick Maddox was on our Westerns episode talking about John Wayne, I was like, all right, sold.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you mentioned Stagecoach, but just talking about John Wayne movies, I think you
did. I'm sure we did. Maybe yeah. that was like an honorable mention.
Have you seen Red River?
List. Yes. Now, oh, damn it. Three-way tie.
You oh, nice.
Right.
Oh,
Red River.
Yeah, that's, he's really, yeah. that's some, he's great in that, man.
Yeah. That, okay, so it is a three-way tie. I was wrong. I loved Red River. I don't even know why I didn't think about it. I guess I haven't been using my letterbox to.
Oh, there you
I just started using it again halfway through the year, so I missed Red River.
But I was just talking. I was talking to Brian about that, about how I had forgotten about Letterbox. If you don't know what Letterbox is, head on over to www.letterboxd.com. No e.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On Boxed, but it's really cool. It's imagine like Facebook, but just for movies. And it's just, if you're a movie geek, go check that website out.
Yeah, that's how I usually reductively yeah. sell it to people. I'm like, it's Facebook for movie geeks.
Yeah, yes. And it's really fun because, like we were talking about, Brian, it's like you get to see, like, if you're interested in a movie, say it was like Real Bravo or something, you go to Real Bravo and you see what other people are saying, but then you go to their profile and see what their favorite movies are, and then see like, oh well, this guy likes stupid movies. I'm like, yeah. I don't believe what he's saying.
No, it's really an interesting yeah. sort of like data gathering. Like, oh, I can get a sense that I might like this movie. Like, I use like yeah. this whole floating, like it's a combination of like the IMDb rating is just part of it, but then sometimes Letterboxd, I'll find people that like they have the right alchemy, the right combination of favorite movies. I'm like, this looks like I could dig this, you know, because it's yeah. really neat. Because if people don't know, on the profile page, you pick your four favorite movies, and you can swap those out all the time. But it's always interesting to see what people pick for their four favorite movies.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That's why I stalk people. I mean, just no, I'd look I for kinda, people, and you're like, yeah. like, oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't pick that movie, but you did it in a public forum. Okay. But no, I love that website now. So
yeah, I've been much better about it. I think the last half of the year, I was like, oh shit, I have this, and well, because I realized I could put
keep
it
a video
on my
diary.
Yeah, yeah, I love the video because I can just every time I get out of a movie, first thing I do is go on Letterboxd. Like, all right,
yeah,
I saw it this day.
The mobile adjustment. They need to do an app, but the yeah. mobile adjustment yeah. is pretty great.
You know if they're doing an app? Because that would be awesome.
I keep badgering them on Twitter, but they never respond. Yeah. I think they're probably working up to it. I just, yeah. I think they're waiting until they have maybe more people. I think it's still kind of technically beta, maybe?
Yeah. I think they're off of beta now, so.
Yeah, they might yeah. be public now. You're yeah. right. You're right. But.
Very cool. Very cool. So it's to Brian, I think.
Okay, so my number two is also a Western. It's one that, again, I meant to see for a long time. I'd had the Blu-ray at least a year, but it's William Wyler's The Big Country. And this is another one of those movies that's got like a ridiculous cast of Gregory Peck, Gene Simmons, Carol Baker, Charlton Heston, Burl Ives, and there's Chuck Connors. The plot is a New Englander arrives in the Old West, where he becomes embroiled in a feud between two families over a valuable patch of land. First of all, William Wyler, I'm sure people are familiar with. He did like Ben-Hur and Best Years of Our Lives is really great.
Oh, okay. Oh, I love Best yeah. Years of Our Lives.
Heartbreaking. Yeah. I love The Collector. I mean, he's a fantastic director, so I should have known that it would be great. I think it might have been the length of it, because it's 168 minutes, that somehow, I just don't have three-hour chunks with the kids anymore, so it's, and I'd rather watch a three-hour movie in one sitting, but I had to split it up over two nights, and it was pretty great nonetheless. But yeah, it's totally like a, sort of like a soap opera where, you know, Gregory Peck comes out and he sort of gets in the middle of these two, one like rich, sort of more well-off family and one sort of lower class, I guess you'd call them white trash family, run by Burl Ives. And it's just, it's got some great moments in it, and it's just a phenomenal finale that just had me like as on the edge of my seat as I've been in recent memory. So it's fantastic. Highly recommended.
Very cool, very cool. And what year is that from again?
It's from 58.
Yeah. Gotta check that out. It sounds like something I would like. So, Jenny?
All right. So,
you're number two,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, my number two, I have never seen, and it's surprising that I've never seen it because you'd think I would have, especially with my background. It's 1939's Gone with the Wind. And I finally saw it over Christmas break. My sister got it on Blu-ray. Nice. And I got to watch it with my family, which my dad and my sister are really big into movies. We're a movie type of family. My mom likes movies, but she never really speaks, you know, about, she never really has like a, talks highly about any certain movie or anything like that as much as we do, I guess. And getting to watch this movie with my mom was fantastic. Like, I watched it with all of my family, but she was just so into this. It's just her type of movie, you know? Like, when you watch a movie with someone who loves a movie so much, then it just makes you completely fall in love with it. So, I loved it. It was so fucking long. Oh, my God. It got to the intermission. I was like, wait, I don't understand. Is it over or what's intermission mean? I don't get it.
It's like, this is where you get to pee because yeah. It's so long.
It's like, I don't understand what's going on here. But yeah, I knew all the plot points and everything like that, but I'd never actually seen it. And I loved it. Scarlett's a huge bitch, but you know, that's to be expected, I guess. I don't know. And I love Rhett Butler.
Yeah.
He's great.
I haven't seen it in a while. I haven't seen it since, like, it's at least high school. Yeah. So, I gotta check it out again.
But now you own it, so.
Yeah. Now it's in my collection.
This is one of those movies I remember watching with my grandma a lot.
And your grandma loved it.
Yeah, my grandma loved
it. I think it was my mom and my grandma probably loved it.
Yeah, and I remember they'd always do, like, the TV specials where they would air it without commercial breaks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, we watched it. I mean, we actually ended up stopping it in the middle to go have dinner. And come back. I mean, my mom had just made dinner, so we just went to the other room real quick, had dinner, and came back.
So you took advantage of
the
intermission.
We took the intermission and had dinner.
What do you guys think? Do you guys like intermissions? I like intermissions, especially in like
a... Well, for a four-hour movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even for a two-and-a-half-hour, I would welcome a return of intermissions. I don't understand why theaters don't want that.
Because like, they spend more money on...
Yeah, you get more concession money.
Yeah. And I hate when it gets to the point of... The 3-hour point in Django where I'm like, I really have to fucking pee and I don't want to leave.
And look, I don't have a funnel, okay?
Yeah. I bought a drink from you people. You're making me drink your drink and now I have to pee and thanks a lot.
They either need to start doing intermissions or they need to start selling shiwis at the concession stand.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
Or put urinals.
Those are options, guys.
A urinal is going to work for a lady, though.
Well, maybe you have like a little like cupping.
A cupping thing, yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
Suction, kind of suction.
Dirty. Yeah.
Like the astronauts use.
All the seats are toilets.
But yeah, that's cool that you finally saw it.
Yeah,
and it's such a big, like, huge, iconic film too.
It is, yeah. I couldn't believe I'd never seen it, but I loved it. Everything about it. It's one of those ones that everyone has to see. You just, you have to see it.
Even if you hate it after, you gotta see it.
Yeah, fantastic.
Very cool. That's your number two?
Yep.
Excellent. My number two is a movie I talked about in the aviation episode, I think, and I talked about it before, but it's a movie from 1989. And it is Millennium. Have you guys seen this? With Kris Kristofferson and Cheryl Ladd?
Nope.
It's very interesting. I the cover is basically like this like crazy like spaceship, like futuristic.
Oh, I totally remember that cover.
Right? So it's like a seven, I don't know what, I can't tell from the back of this plane, but looks like it's 757 or something going into like this crazy light. And this is a really interesting movie. I'd like to see it remade, just, you know, because half this movie is, like, really fucking serious, like, with Kris Kristofferson. And then the next half is, like, really, really cheesy sci-fi. So it's a really interesting mix of that. But basically the story is Kris Kristofferson is a NTSB investigator, and he's investigating this airplane crash. A plane went down, and he's investigating it. And something's fishy about it, like... The people that died in the plane crash, they do like autopsies, and they notice that the people have been dead from before the plane took off. So they were dead before the plane went down. I mean, so everything it started sounding fishy. So he starts looking into it. Well, you find out later that Cheryl Ladd is from 1,000 years in the future, and it's like this dystopian future where they have to rebuild up the population. And what they do in the future is they have time travel capabilities, and they find natural disasters like airplane crashes and stuff like that, and they go and they steal people that were going to die.
Holy crap, I do remember watching this as a kid.
Right? This is a creepy movie. Yep. And they steal people from the past to bring them into the future that were going to die anyway, to bring them in to repopulate the future.
Wow, sounds like Rian Johnson saw this movie.
Yeah. and but what's so,
I mean, it's different, but
what's really crazy is that at one point where the plane's about to go down, they suck in the plane, the tail end of the plane, into the future, so into the time travel thing. So the ass of the plane, they open it up, and they're going into and retrieving all the bodies, and they're putting bodies of people who died back into, so they're replacing the bodies. But so the front half of the plane is in the present, and the other half is in the future. And it's like really like a mind fuck, and it's really interesting. And so like they're doing all this stuff, and like at one point, like one of the people, because they kind of like zap the people dead, like so they're kind of unconscious, and one of the people starts waking up, and like they got to deal with that, and it's really really nuts. And like for some reason, like Cheryl Ladd is like she takes the place of one of the she goes back to the past to kind of make sure everything goes okay, and nobody kind of like there's nothing fishy, but there's like this weird like sex scene with like her and like Chris Christopherson for some reason that like not needed at all, and that's creepy. But the whole movie's really really fun, and it's just really trippy because it's like futuristic, really cheesy sci-fi mixed with like Chris Christopherson's part in the present like wants to be really serious. Oh, yeah, wow. But yeah, so it's a really fun movie.
That's one I totally remember seeing the VHS box too, and I never saw it. I think I confused it with that movie Slipstream with I think that's the one I'm thinking of with Mark Hamill.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know if they had similar covers, but I swear I thought I saw it. I'd seen it based on that cover, but you described that, I totally haven't seen it.
Yeah, and it's what's so crazy is that literally I had never heard of this movie. It was literally the cover on Netflix because I saw it on streaming.
Netflix. Damn, it's not on streaming anymore.
It's not anymore, no.
Bummed.
And I was like, I was watching and I'm like, I was just kind of, it's one of those nights where you're like looking for something and nothing is good. You're like, oh, I don't want to watch that. I'm not in the mood for that, definitely. And I was like, this cover looks amazingly fun. Like, what is up with this plane? Where is it going? And I'm like, I'll play it. And it turned out to be really fun, and I'm glad I watched it. So check it out if you like sci-fi and stuff.
I just love that it's in a 3-pack with Stargate and Capricorn 1.
Wow.
Awesome.
That's an interesting triple feature.
Interesting trifecta.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so check it out if you get a chance. Kevin?
Okay. So the last two films on my list, I'm a fan of the horror genre, but I always feel like it's hard to find the gems. Yeah. Luckily, I know Adam. So from here on out, the rest of my list is pretty fucked up.
Wait. I don't know how I should take that.
My number two is from 2008, and it's Martyrs.
Ooh. Oh.
This movie will fuck your head up. It's amazing, but at the end of it, you just sit there and go, what the hell?
Is it that French film? Is that the French film?
It's, yeah.
I gotta watch this. You guys keep talking about this.
Well, the French are doing amazing things in horror, so just go out there and watch them.
Oh, Ricardo, you haven't seen that?
No.
I'd be very curious to hear what you think of it. Ooh. It's pretty intense.
I mean, it takes a genre. So basically, okay, the plot is a young woman's quest for revenge against the people who kidnapped and tormented her as a child leads her and a friend, who is also a victim of child abuse, on a terrifying journey into a living hell of depravity.
Wow.
But I mean, they take the horror genre and they go this direction that you wouldn't think. And it's brilliant. It's very, I mean, the whole film, it really makes you think and it really gets in your head. And you're just at the end, like I said, at the end, you kind of, I think I sat there for like 2 hours just thinking about the movie. And then the next day, again, thinking about the movie. It's just something that just stuck with me. And it's not like outright, like there's no like outright scares or anything like that, but it's really creepy and it just sits with you. And that's what a good horror movie does, is it just sits with you in that way. Like afterwards, you're just like kind of creeped out. It's just really good. And they take that genre and they go this direction that nobody's ever gone before.
Wow. I gotta check it out. Crazy Frenchies, huh? Mm-hmm. Are they pretty sick?
Watch the movie.
Oh, man. I mean, I know it is.
It's twisted.
Well, I don't want to step on your list, but I'm pretty sure, I know this one isn't like Frontiers. Anyone else seen Frontiers? Have you seen Frontiers?
What is that one?
It's like the French take it's on Hostel. It's
Xavier Gunn's film?
Oh, no.
It's like these, it's like they take Hostel and they inject adrenaline into it and just, because like it's in this dystopian future where like a totalitarian government has taken over France and these people are fleeing the city and they end up at this hostel kidnapped by crazy cannibal type people.
Wow.
It's messed up.
What is it called? Frontier?
Frontiers.
Wow.
I think it was streaming for a little while.
That seems... I want to see Martyrs now. Like, yes. Tonight. But, yeah. Good luck with that. All right. Where are we at? Number two?
Number two. Okay. So this is a nice sort of dovetailing segue. Because I found this movie because of horror. I found this movie because of American Horror Story.
Ooh.
Where they watch this movie. The devil really wants to watch this movie. Cecil B. DeMille's The Sign of the Cross. Which I had never seen before, but I think it was like a third episode of American Horror Story Asylum, and having movie night, and and if you haven't seen the show, the devil is a character, and she's really excited about watching this movie because they feed the Christians to the lions.
Wow!
And
what was it called again?
The Sign of the Cross.
The Sign of the Cross.
And it's about Nero. He burned down the city, or was rumored to have burned down the city of Rome, and one of his advisors convinces him to blame it on the Christians, and so they decide to round up all the Christians and kill them and have them fight each other and feed them to lions and whatnot. And when I think of Cecil B. DeMille, I just always thought of the Ten Commandments. I never think about the pre-code Cecil B. DeMille. And this is pre-code movie, and it's got this infamous scene that I didn't even know about. Where it's Claudette Colbert in a milk bath. And it's pre-code, so like I'm used to Claudette Colbert, it happened one night. Not Claudette Colbert naked in a pool of milk.
Wow. Huh. Wow.
And I hadn't even thought about it when I put it on. I'm like, oh yeah, this pre-code, and it's great, and it's disturbing, and like, it's just one of those things, like it's 1932, and you don't think about what they would just let slide. They didn't care. Like, there's child torture and they feed Christians to lions and there's a scene where
so it's like the French cinema.
It is. It I think it was a precursor to the French horror cinema of today. When the Romans are trying to capture the Christians, they find out where they're meeting in secret for like their prayer meeting, and they just surround them and start shooting arrows into the crowd. And like they show people getting hit with arrows. And this is 1932. Claudette Colbert is great. Charles Laughton is amazing as Nero, where the movie opens, Rome is burning, and he's just playing his lyre. And it just, as much as I love the movie for what it is, I'm also thinking about it's making scenes from History of the World make more sense. Because I'm seeing Charles Laughton's Nero in Dom DeLuise's Caesar. it's just so many, it's working on so many different levels.
I wonder if you could edit those two movies together.
You probably could. It would work really well. It's a lot of fun. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. The whole there's a Cecil B. DeMille collection. It's like this, The Crusades, Union Pacific, Four Frightened People, and there's one other one, I think.
On DVD?
Yeah, it's like a DVD box.
So. Okay.
And so I've been kind of working my way through that, but this one, Sign of the Cross, has been one of my favorites.
I really enjoy Asylum, the American Horror Stories.
Yeah,
they're like season long episodes of Twilight Zone episodes. You know, like it's like
it's so good.
It's so good, and I like that every season's a different tale. Yeah. I like that a lot. That it's very refreshing and stuff.
Season one's on Netflix streaming.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen it,
check that
season two is completely different. So you don't have to see either one. You can just start with two.
Yeah, start with two. Start
with
one.
It's fine.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's the same cast. It's up different people.
We are at number one.
That doesn't make sense.
real quick, I just looked. Millennium is actually on Netflix. And
it's still.
It's two N's. L-I-L-L.
Yes. Yes. I had the same problem looking at it.
Yeah, I just found it. So it is at the top of my queue now. Thank you for that.
Is Millennium regularly spelled with one N?
I thought it was one.
I thought it was one as well.
I think it's a special.
Maybe it's two.
I don't know.
Could be wrong.
I want to say two.
Maybe it's two.
I won't challenge you.
I don't know. Yeah.
You're like, we can go next door and find out.
This next time on the Spelling Bee podcast. Yeah. So my number one is I'm a big Ernst Lubitsch fan.
Well, before you get to your number one,
oh, I got a recap. My bad. So
for people who are just tuning in right now,
they're listening to the show live. Okay, so my number five was a tie. It is The Scarlet Claw and Charlie Chan at the Wax Museum. My number four was The Last of Sheila. My number three was A Thousand Clowns. My number two was The Big Country. And my number one is called Bluebeard's Eighth Wife. And it's a Lubitsch film. I'm a big fan of Lubitsch. To Be or Not to Be, Shop Around the Corner, Design for Living, Trouble in Paradise. These are all movies I really like a lot. They're just great. Early, you know, most of them are 30s. There's a couple 40s in there. But he's just a really clever, really funny. I mean, if you like Preston Sturges, he's like right in that school, in that wheelhouse. And I love Sturges too. So anyway, this one is Gary Cooper and Claudette Colbert. And it's kind of, it's sort of a reverse, well, I don't want to say it's a reverse Lady Eve, but it's like the daughter of a penniless marquis teaches her millionaire fiance a lesson after learning he had six or seven previous wives. So it's just her kind of fucking with Gary Cooper for the whole movie, and he's really fun. I mean, if you can go for that Gary Cooper of Design for a Living, and he can be really funny, I think. And he is really funny in this, and she's great too. This is one of my favorite Claudette Colbert performances. It's just really funny. I can't even describe. It's just one to seek out. I think it probably is only on disc on Netflix. It was part of like a Claudette Colbert box set that I ended up buying, but I'm sure they have the disc on Netflix. I haven't seen it streaming yet, but it's also got Ernst Lubitsch regular Edward Everett Horton, who most people will know as the voice of the Fractured Fairy Tales on Rocky and Bullwinkle. He is fantastic. He's a great. He's always sort of a comic foil to somebody in these Lubitsch films where he's just kind of a doofy guy, but he's really funny, and his voice is just amazing. So, and David Niven is also in it. It's just, I can't recommend you check it out enough. It's easily my favorite of all the movies I saw last year.
I feel like there should be an app or a website where you punch in everything you have. So you punch in your Netflix, you know, account. You punch in your iTunes, you punch in your cable provider, and it tells you where it's playing.
Yeah, I agree.
Or like, hey, it's at your local library.
That would be amazing. Yeah, plug that in too. Yeah. Because I feel like with all those sources, there probably wouldn't be too much you couldn't find.
Yeah, yeah.
At any given time, yeah. Be it streaming or on disc somewhere.
Oh, yeah, or movie on demand, you know, like, yeah. So.
Yeah.
No, maybe you should learn the iOS language and you can create the program.
You lost the iOS language.
I would subscribe to something like that if it was cheap enough. If it was like a, you know, $1 a month or a couple bucks to buy the app, I would totally do that.
Yeah. I would pay $5 for that app. Yeah. Somebody make that.
Yep. I'm with you.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool list. I'm with you. Like, and I thought of this app because you're now, you know, I kind of want to see that, but I'm like, okay, I don't have Netflix discs, so how am I going to see this movie? And I gave up. I'll never see this movie because
You know, it should search, you know, TCM upcoming listings, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing.
I just want to go on a Claudette Colbert. Just looking through her credits, there was a 1956 version of Blythe Spirit with her and Lauren Bacall.
Nice. I haven't seen
that. I want to see that. I don't know if it exists on DVD, but someone should put that out because I'd watch it because I love Blythe Spirit.
Very cool. All right, so where are we at? Jenny, you're number one?
All right, so my number five was Scrooged, four was Pan's Labyrinth, three was Charade, two is Gone with the Wind, and my number one is actually a director that I discovered this year, and I went through all of his movies and liked all of them, so it's kind of a tie for like six movies
nice.
That I saw, but I'll just go with the director in general and then say the movies. I'll say the one that I liked the most, but the director I'm talking about is Miyazaki. I finally went on my Miyazaki binge. I had a friend that has Netflix disc, so we could actually watch them all. So like once a week he would get them and then we'd just, you know, do that once a week. And I liked all the older ones a lot. My favorite one was probably Nausicaa. I actually really want to go as her for Comic-Con next year because I think I could. But they're all great. They're enough where they're good for kids, but they're also, they've got that interesting, you know, add all this interesting elements to it so that it's a little bit, it's good for adults too. And so it kept us interested the entire time. The newer ones, I'm not a big fan of Ponyo. I didn't really like, I thought it was a little bit too childish, but I think a lot of kids probably liked it. So that's, it was just a little bit different for the Miyazakis that I'd seen before. Maybe if that was the first one I saw, then it would be different. But I really like Nausicaa. The other one I really liked was Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah.
I loved that one a lot. The images and it's just so interesting the way his mind works. It's, I would never create something like that. Like, it's just amazing how he put all these elements together to create this world. And yeah, so I liked all those. The other ones I saw were like Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, Totoro, and Castle in the Sky.
Nice.
So those are all the six that I saw. The one I haven't seen yet is Kiki's Delivery Service. So I still need to get that one. That one wasn't on anything, so I don't know how to watch that one.
It used to be on disc. I bought a bunch of them for my little girl. A friend of mine said you should start her on Totoro, and she fucking loved it.
Yeah, I've heard Totoro's really good for the younger ones too.
Yeah.
I really liked it. Stuff. It was cute, and they did a Bob's Burger reference for Totoro.
That's awesome.
And it was awesome on the Thanksgiving episode. And I think it's a good one to start off with because it is referenced the most probably, and it's really easy to get into and everything.
Yeah, it's great. No, I mean, mine likes Totoro. She likes Kiki's. She likes Ponyo. And we watched Nausicaa for the first time this year too, and I think that movie's amazing. That almost made my list. I think it's like a Miyazakian take on like Dune or something like that. That's what it feels like to me.
Sold.
It's totally worthwhile. It's really cool.
Nausicaa's great.
Really cool shit.
Howl's Moving Castle is the Christian Bale one?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Porco Rosso is pretty cool too. I know it sounds weird, but
that's weird. I didn't like Porco Rosso.
I liked it. It's got
Michael Keaton, right?
Yeah, Michael Keaton does the English dub.
Oh, okay. One I haven't looked at
yet. He's like a pig pilot, and you got to see it. I mean, if you like his shit, you should see it. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I understand maybe why you didn't dig it, but I like that one.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. He does a lot of weird things, like in Spirited Away, where her parents turn into these huge like hogs that can't stop eating. It's kind of disgusting, but I love all of them. He's so into the environment too, and that's another part that I think is really important for kids to remember that they don't get that anymore in anything, and so I think it's really important for
besides
them to
Wall-E.
Like, Wall-E was a good one too. Wall-E was definitely a good one, but I think they're definitely good ones. I think it's something
that Wall-E hater.
You don't like Wall-E?
I fucking hate Wall-E.
Why?
I don't know why I hated it.
Did you hate the first 40 minutes? There's a lot of stillness.
Yeah, okay. I like the first half.
I'll give you the last, yeah, you know.
The last half lost
the
me.
First 40 minutes is almost heartbreaking. The rest of it, I can go with it. It's not my favorite stuff, but the first part is amazing.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that.
But speaking of Pixar, I was going to say, any filmmaker that inspires John Lasseter so much, John Lasseter loves the shit.
Yes, I love that.
He's on intro on every DVD.
Yeah, he does an intro on all of them. I love it. John Lasseter is fantastic.
I don't know who's in charge of like the voiceover acting for the dubs, but they pick some great talent to do the voices.
Yeah, every single one of them has great people, and you're sitting there trying to think like, oh my god, I know that voice. Who is that?
I almost always have to stop and look because it drives me crazy.
I do too. That's one thing I'm really good at is I'm used to be really good at just knowing names of people and faces, and I also have this ear for voices for some reason. I can tell you who does all the commercials. And
yeah,
everything.
I do that to my wife.
And
too.
So I'll be like, oh, that's that person, but. For some reason, especially on these, because like Mark Hamill's on one of them, but you can't tell because he's doing one of his Mark Hamill voices, and so
he's the
really,
Joker.
He's a really good voiceover actor.
Yeah, I love it. I do. I look him up on IMDb every time I'm watching him. I'm like, okay, whose voice is that?
Very cool. I like it. It was like a 7-way tie. But
yeah,
like
sorry.
Well, it's well deserved. Like that's a good. It's great discovery.
Yeah, anybody that hasn't discovered him should really. Because to be honest, I hadn't until about 2 years ago when I started my daughter on them, and it's just been a
magical
journey.
Yeah, you're so lucky because you have, because there's a lot of movies that I'm like, well, I can't really watch that. I'm not, I don't really have a kid around to watch it. Like my Ricardo's nieces, whenever they come over, then we're like, oh, we can watch this movie
because
I have like a kid to watch it with.
No, it's great. I mean, it's great just to have, to be able to go into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And once that you find that they like something, it's more of an excuse for you to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Do more of the, that filmmaker. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Very good picks. I'm liking them. Let's see. My recap is number 5 was Batteries Not Included. Number 4 was Viva Zapata. Number 3 was El Norte. Number 2 was Millennium. And my number 1 is a movie my dad owned, another movie my dad owned, and I actually bought on VHS, but never watched it until this year. And it is Red Sun from 1971 with Charles Bronson and Toshirô Mifune. Have you guys, anybody seen this?
I meant to, but
it's really, really cool. I could see where the Jackie Chan Owen Wilson movie. I could see where they kind of stole some ideas from this thing, you know, because at parts it's really, really funny. And it, especially because Toshirô Mifune is so freaking serious, and Charles Bronson, it's a fun role for him. I feel like because he's playing like a little slapsticky stuff. But basically, what the gist of it is there's these samurais that are going to deliver this like golden sword to the U.S. president, and they're on a train, and Charles Bronson and his gang. Rob the stagecoach, not the stagecoach, the train, and the guy, one of Charles Bronson's friends decides to betray him. So they leave him for dead, and they leave with all the loot and including the sword that they were going to deliver, but not before killing all the samurai except 2, the main ambassador and Toshirô Mifune, who was out fighting, you know, more of the bad guys outside. So. The Japanese ambassador tells Toshirô Mifune, you have 7 days to recover the sword. And he gives him a blade. And the blade has 7 knots. He's undo each knot after each day. And when you get to 7, if you haven't found the sword, kill yourself, bro. And kill this guy who's going to help you. And it's Charles Bronson. And the adventure and hilarity ensues.
Wait, does Bronson know that he's going to die if he fucks it up?
Yeah. And oh, well, wow. Bronson's also looking for the guy because he betrayed him, you know, and he wants to get part of the loot. So they're both in it for different reasons, and enemies become friends. Friends become enemies. But yeah, so it's a really fun movie, and it's Charles Bronson and Toshirô Mifune. Who would have thought these two dudes in a movie? And yeah. So Eats Meets West with like samurais and, you know, cowboys. So have you seen this, Kevin?
I have not.
Yeah, it's fun. All right, Kevin.
Okay.
Your 10-way tie for number 1.
My 10-way tie. Okay, so my recap is, so my number 5 was The Innocents, 4 was Johnny Guitar, 3 was a 3-way tie for Factotum, Bukowski Born Into This, and Barfly. 2 was Martyrs, and my number 1 is another French horror film. It scared the shit out of me. And there are scenes in it that I go, okay, why can't more modern horror filmmakers capture this? This is exactly what you need to do. You don't need to throw cheap shit at us. You can scare the hell out of us with tension. And the film is called Inside. It's from 2007. It's actually something that I'm working on right now. It has inspired, there's an element and from a scene that I love that I'm trying to incorporate into a film, just because it literally, I was watching it in the dark and the scene is going on and I started freaking the fuck out and was like, I think I started at the front of my bed and pushed myself all the way to the back to get away from the screen. The movie it's really good and it's terrifying and it's very, in a way it's almost simple, just the story. And the director just takes these elements that you haven't really seen before, and he terrifies you.
What kind of horror is this? Is it like a ghost, an entity?
It's a person.
Slasher?
Not. I wouldn't really call her a slasher. She's a fucking psycho.
Really? Have you seen this, Adam?
I recommended it to him.
He recommended it to me.
It's one of those movies where you want to talk about it, but you don't want to give anything
exactly.
away.
Okay.
Wait, this is the French horror movie, right?
Yeah, French horror movie, 2007. Okay. So it's about the
Can we say there's a female lead character?
There's two female
without leads. Without giving... Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, well, because when I was talking with Kevin about it, when I was explaining it to him before, I was just like, oh, I want it. There's this moment, but I can't talk about the moment because it gives away that, like, I feel like there's one moment in the movie that if you talk about it, you steal that moment from the person where they can't appreciate the moment. And it's really good. But so it's a pregnant woman is in a car accident and her husband dies and she's having her baby or she's alone.
Are you describing the scene?
No, okay.
He's describing the plot. The plot won't give away anything.
The shitty part that I'm not supposed to tell you, I'm going to tell you. all the listeners. No, this is the plot of the movie. It's like this pregnant woman, she's in a car accident and her husband dies and she's alone on Christmas Eve. And then this woman
just starts fucking with
her. Starts shows up at the house and wants her baby.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, it blew me away. And I wouldn't recommend you do this, but my wife was pregnant at the time when we watched it.
Oh my god.
It was fucking intense. And she liked it too, don't get me wrong, but it made it even more intense to watch it. But oh my god, it's fucking good.
It's so good.
Unfortunately for me, I don't feel like any of the French horror films. I'm not as big a fan of Martyrs, but that movie, I don't think any of them. I guess High Tension, kind of a little bit.
Them. Mm.
Oh yeah, Them is pretty good. Yeah, you're right. But Inside for me is like tip top.
Oh yeah,
just fucking blew my mind. It was so good, so intense, so good.
And they're all dubbed, right?
No, it's all subtitles.
Oh, okay, subtitles. Okay. I mean, I guess
there's not a whole ton of dialogue. I remember.
Yeah, not
I
mean, Inside. Some.
That's what I hate about streaming stuff. Sometimes is when it's a foreign film, like it's like. I forgot one movie I was watching that I'm like, why the fuck is this dubbed? And I had to go change it back to the original language with English subtitles.
Mm-hmm. They've gotten better at that, though. Yeah. They didn't even used to offer that, right? You'd get like a dubbed version.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was it. You can get subtitles
and all that. It's gotten better.
Yeah, it's gotten better.
But yeah, definitely check this one out, Ricardo. You gotta see it.
So good. Yeah. So good.
It sucks because I can't watch horror movies with my girlfriend. I gotta wait till Jenny's available.
Jenny, have you seen Inside?
I've never seen
it.
Oh
my god.
I like horror movies
because
a lot, though.
I don't.
So I like High Tension a lot.
I don't like watching horror movies alone. I'm not gonna lie.
I know. He makes me come over here, and then I have to go walk outside in the dark to my car and go all the way home. It's awesome.
Don't watch this because this movie will not make you want to leave the apartment. You'll be like, I'm going to stay here tonight.
Crash on the couch?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. No, very cool. It's one of my favorites of the past 10 years.
It's just so,
do you guys like The Descent? Are you fans?
I love The Descent.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's not that supernatural, but it's up there with best horror movies I've seen. And not I'm building it up way too much, but I just liked it a lot.
Yeah, very cool. And that is your number one. Adam, give us a recap.
All right, my recap.
I'm just going to throw this out there. It's really weird that you don't have very many horror movies and you have all horror movies. I'm pointing at Adam and Kevin.
I'm good about.
Oh yeah, you've seen every horror movie. That's true.
It's like, you know, the classic westerns. I'm like, oh well, John Wayne.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if you rip someone's heart out, I would have seen that instead. Okay, so my recap, number five. Sorry, my three way tie threw things off. My number five was The Shark Is Still Working. Number four was Who Can Kill a Child. I had a three way tie for number three: Red River, Rio Bravo, and Stagecoach. My number two was The Sign of the Cross. And my number one from 1959 by Mr. William Wyler, my drink kicked in. Ben-Hur.
Nice.
It was one of those movies where I was just never compelled to see it. But I'm glad I waited. And what sealed its spot on number one is I saw it in the Dome.
Oh, yes.
Wow. And so for those who don't know, there's a really great theater. We always talk about it. It's called the Arclight Cinemas here in Hollywood. The Hollywood one is, I guess, the flagship one. And they got tip-top sound, great screens, and they have the big theater. It's a classic theater where they've had movie premieres from, you know, back in the day. How long has it been around? Like,
I want to say 56.
56,
because it's the Cinerama Dome, and they had this... They had this series where they showed original Cinerama movies, and Ben-Hur was a Cinerama movie.
Yep.
And
did you see this part of that series, that This Is Cinerama? Yeah. Isn't that the series?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was amazing.
That's amazing.
I loved it. I'm glad. I'm not ashamed that I waited so long to see it, because seeing the chariot race on the big screen, on the dome, which it was intended for, was one of the best things I've ever seen on film.
Looky. that's really
and
cool.
I knew nothing about the story. It was just kind of like, I haven't seen Ben-Hur. It's Cinerama. It's at the Cinerama Dome. I should check that out.
and I loved it. It was amazing. Charlton Heston's a badass.
He's a pimp.
Yeah.
I was rewatching. I was torturing myself. Well, not me. My coworker was torturing me. He was playing the remake of The Planet of the Apes, the Tim Burton one. And the only good thing about that movie is Tim Roth and Charlton Heston cameo. He was great in it. Even with the makeup, he was still awesome. Yeah. But yes, Ben-Hur.
And this is bringing it back. It's a 3-hour and 32-minute movie, so it had the intermission.
Ooh.
Where they actually stopped it and let us get up and go back to the concession stand and get our refills.
Really?
Oh, nice.
Awesome. I loved it. It was like a little trip back in time.
Did you wear a suit to watch the movie?
I don't think I wore a suit.
We're going to go to the cinema.
Well, I didn't make Savannah go.
Oh.
Because it's a 3-hour, 32-minute movie, and she's not interested in swords and sandals and all that jazz. Sand and sandals.
Sandals. She's not interested in sandals.
Yeah. it's not a Savannah movie.
Yeah.
If Hanson were in it, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I was wearing a blazer, but I don't know if I wore a full suit. Because it was during the day. It wasn't like a fancy nighttime thing. It was a matinee.
All right. Mm.
But it was awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. That is a great number one and in a great situation. And you got lucky.
It's one of the benefits of living in LA.
Yes. Is
just the movie culture.
It's like
we're surrounded by.
Yeah. It's like watching Lawrence of Arabia on like 70mm for the first time.
That was my first time.
Yeah. I think it might have been mine too. That was amazing. But yes, is that wrap us up for?
Unless anyone has honorable mentions.
I don't. I'm done.
I have a couple.
But throw them out there.
Okay. So what did I have here for my honorable mentions? The One and Only is a Carl Reiner movie from 1978, I think. I hadn't really heard about this one somehow. But it's got Henry Winkler and Kim Darby, who people know as the mom from Better Off Dead, who I like a lot. She's in another movie I saw this year called The Strawberry Statement with Bruce Davison, and that's also really good. But anyway, this is sort of like one of those like Henry. It's a period thing, but I think it's 60s. I can't remember when. But Henry Winkler plays this dude who's just like becomes obsessed with Kim Darby, and he just sort of. Is one of those really self-confident people that comes in a room and is just really obnoxious, but somehow charismatic. And so he becomes obsessed with her and finally gets her to fall for him. And then he becomes a professional wrestler, which is not something I expected. And he's midget wrestling. And anyway, it's a very strange film, but it's really
a comedy.
Yeah, it's a comedy. It's funny. It's funny.
It's a dark, depressing drama about Henry Winkler becoming what looks like a Ric Flair type wrestler.
It's the original wrestler.
Yeah, he becomes like this, totally evil villain wrestler. He's sort of searching for himself, and he finds that because he's an actor and he's really obnoxious, and he finds his niche in professional wrestling. He becomes a bad guy professional wrestler.
Nice.
But it's sort of a romance. It's sort of a finding yourself movie. It's good. It's worth tracking down. There's one called Warner Archive, one from Warner Archive I got called Blessed Event. This actor, Lee Tracy, was a guy I got into last year. He's sort of like he looks like a thinner W.C. Fields if you look at him. And he's sort of one of those fast-talking 30s guys. And Blessed Event is kind of like His Girl Friday meets Sweet Smell of Success. So it's a comedy, a fast-talking comedy where this doofy guy takes over a column at a newspaper by starting to, he's got like a line on a hospital where all these like socialites, these high-end socialites, he'll get a report when they're going to have a kid, and he calls it a blessed event, and he puts it in the column, and as much as it's kind of, you know, tabloid news, the paper circulation skyrockets, and he becomes this really high-powered columnist, you know, based on this stupid idea. So he sort of gets drunk with power, and it's just one of those weird comedies that way. But it's definitely worth seeing. I liked Lee Tracy a lot in it, and I liked the movie a lot. Wagon Master, speaking of John Ford, this is a John Ford Western I hadn't seen with Ward Bond. I'm forgetting the lead guys. One of them just passed away, too.
Ben Johnson?
Yeah, Ben Johnson's one of the leads. And the other is, I think... Oh, Harry Carey Jr. just passed away, I think. This was one I'd seen on a list of favorites from one of my DVD review people that I've been following for years. His name's DVD Savant. On his like 2009 list, he really liked this one. It's just a great wagon train Western, another one like Santa Fe Passage. Definitely worth seeing. It happened on Fifth Avenue, was this Christmas movie I'd never heard of. This critic, Alonzo Duraldi, who I really like, he's got a podcast with his partner called Linoleum Knife, which is one of my favorite podcasts. They just talk about movies, and they're just super funny to listen to. He's got a book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, where he goes through all kinds of really cool Christmas movies. This one is basically like this this rich man has a house on Fifth Avenue, and he goes away for the I want to say the winter, and this bum like hobo dude like moves into his house when he goes away. And so it ends up that, like, you know, multiple people start moving into the house, including his daughter, who has to pretend she's not his daughter. And then her dad, who owns the house, has to pretend he's also a hobo, and he moves into the house too. It's just a really charming, like, it's like a classic Christmas tale that should be well known. Like, everybody should have seen this. I know they ran it on Turner Classic. It's on DVD, but just one of those movies that really got me. Just really, I was like, oh, I'm going to watch that every year at Christmas. It's great. I'll try and run through these really quick. I'm sorry, I got like three or four more.
That's right.
This movie called Banning, which is, fuck, who's the lead in it? I want to say, damn it. It's basically like a golf noir.
A golf noir.
On my site. Oh, Robert Wagner. Thank you. Yes. Robert Wagner's the lead. Basically, it's like, it's a little bit like if Caddyshack were a hard-boiled soap opera.
Wow. That
sounds amazing.
It's really, there's like all this hard-boiled dialogue. There's like a golf competition. He's a golf pro, and it's just really, it's super cheesy, but I don't know. I had a great time with it. It's not on DVD. It's only on VHS. I really want it to be on DVD. Anyway, that one was a lot of fun. Tarzan and His Mate, I had never seen. The Weissmuller. Mm-hmm. And speaking of pre-code, everything's batshit crazy. I mean, there's some fucked up shit in this movie. I mean, you know, the end, I don't want to give away too much, but it's got a really great finale with lots of people getting attacked by animals. And there's just a lot of killing in the movie.
Wait, what was this one called?
Tarzan and His Mate, the second Weissmuller film with him and Maureen O'Sullivan and the guy who played Commissioner Gordon on the Batman TV show. Anyway, that's really fun. There was a couple times though while watching that movie I was like, holy shit. I mean, I literally said that out loud to myself because I just didn't expect what was going on screen. There's a movie called Satan Met a Lady. Another actor I got into last year is this guy Warren William. He kind of looks like John Barrymore. He's got this sort of tall, skinny, charismatic feeling. Anyway, Satan Met a Lady is like a screwball comedy take on The Maltese Falcon, which a lot of people, I guess, hate the movie, but I love The Maltese Falcon and I still love this. I thought it was a lot of fun. So definitely worth checking out. Another Warner Archive pick, Union Depot, is like a low budget, I think it's from the 40s or 50s, and it's just like a bunch of people at a train station, sort of lives intersecting kind of. It's cool. It was much unexpected surprise kind of movie. And lastly, Ulzana's Raid is a from the director of The Dirty Dozen. Why can't I think of his name either? Anyway, it's got Burt Lancaster and it's thank you, Adam. Oh, Robert Aldrich, who I like a lot. Lancaster and Bruce Davison. It's a lot of fun. Not a lot of fun. It's a sort of intense siege western. It's again sort of cavalry versus Native American kind of thing, but it's got a really great ending, and Lancaster's great. It's sort of a cult film that I'd been meaning to see for a long time. But anyway, sorry to blather on.
Those no, are, no.
That's everything I got. No.
You just filled my watch list.
By the way, I don't know, we didn't talk about it at the beginning of the podcast, but this is like a year, when this airs, it'll be tomorrow. So today, what's his name died? David Ellis, the director of Snakes on a Plane.
Yes.
Oh, passed away. Wow.
So, wow.
He did this, not a lot of people know, he did a lot of the stunts for like old movies. So he did a little great movie called Roadhouse. He did the stunts for that.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Yeah, like Patriot Games, a bunch of the 80s stuff. He was actually the stunt coordinator, so. And became a director. He directed Final Destination, Snakes on a Plane, Cellular, stuff like that. B-horror. So, anyway, Adam, you have some honorable mentions?
I have a couple. Kevin reminded me of one when he's talking about Sterling Hayden. This was another movie I got to see on the big screen, Naked Alibi. So a film noir with Sterling Hayden and Gloria Graham.
Ooh.
And Gene Barry. And it's really a darker movie, even though it's a film noir. It's a darker movie than I was expecting. It's like the sheriff is convinced this guy is a murderer, and he ends up like going out of his jurisdiction and chasing him to this border town
where he discovers his mistress, played by Gloria Graham. From she plays the blonde girl in It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh yeah,
And she's in A Lonely Place, which Kevin mentioned earlier.
In A Lonely Place. I love Gloria Graham and Sterling
Hayden.
She's
awesome.
But Gene Barry is really creepy in this movie, and it's just a weird, weird dark movie, like a border town movie. It reminds me a lot of Touch of Evil. The whole border towns are bad places to live.
Yeah, no, it's true.
It's not as good as Touch of Evil, but I did really like it, and seeing it on the big screen was pretty awesome. And it was a new print, so that it looked great. What else? I got a couple. Oh, another Rick Maddox recommendation, Lonesome Dove.
Yes,
loved it. I just didn't include it because it's a made-for-TV miniseries.
Still a movie, yeah.
Yeah, but I figured I had enough.
Yeah.
And then Torment from 1944, Ingmar Bergman movie, mm-hmm. like one of his first, I think his first movie that he wrote and directed.
Wow.
Which I really liked. It's about a kid whose boarding school teacher is like a sadistic, like literally sadistic, where he's torturing this woman that the main kid falls in love with. It's pretty dark. Lots of fun there. And
lots of torture and violence in this list.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then 1982's White Dog, which I saw for the first time. Sam Fuller.
It's pretty amazing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot scarier than I thought it was going to be, and it's really good.
Who did Straw Dogs? Was it Sam Fuller?
No, this is Straw Dogs is Peckinpah.
Peckinpah. That's what it was.
Yeah. It's from 1982. I mean, I love me some. Who all is it?
Christy McNichol.
Her character is so annoying, but like she needs to be as annoying as she is because like it's part of the point of the story. But Paul Winfield is great.
Oh my god!
And then Burl Ives, and the ending. It's a great ending.
Yeah, I love Paul Winfield.
And then I mean some minor discoveries that I was pleasantly surprised by. Tiny Furniture.
Oh yeah, oh, you cool. mentioned
which
that.
I hated Girls, but so I wasn't gonna watch Tiny Furniture. But then I relented and I loved it. So now I have to go back and rewatch Girls.
That's not correct. I like
that's,
it better.
That's a criterion now.
Yeah, I like it better than Girls overall, personally, but Girls is like the same mm-hmm.
vibes.
Yeah, I like the character. It's like you're playing the same character, like the same characters, but different versions of the characters in Tiny Furniture, and I like the Tiny Furniture versions better.
I do too.
And then Harsh Times, I finally saw, and I really liked that.
I totally want to see that.
Oh, the David Ayer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised. It was not the movie I was expecting at all. I think that is about.
I thought you said Hard Times, and I thought Charles Bronson.
No, Harsh Times. Oh, and then this movie from 2009 with Jeff Daniels and Ryan Reynolds and Emma Stone, Paperman. I really liked Paperman. It was on Instant for a while.
Yeah, it was.
And it was a lot of fun. It was not the movie I thought it was going to be.
Well, isn't Ryan he Reynolds an author
with
or something?
Blonde hair. Hmm.
Well, Paperman with Jeff Bridges, you said.
Jeff Ooh. Daniels.
Is it the one where he's an author? Or
yeah,
something?
He's an author who like his wife moves him out of the city to write his novel, and he has his imaginary friend played by Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, okay.
Emma Stone's in it. Kieran Culkin, Lisa Kudrow. It's fun. I really liked it.
Cool.
I don't think it got very good reviews, but I thought it was great.
So, how much is it like Drop Dead Fred?
It's not like Drop Dead Fred.
I didn't think so.
Total opposite end of the spectrum. No talking about gladiolas and looking up mom's dress. None of that happens.
Nice.
No one crashes Carrie Fisher's boat.
Kevin, did you see anything? Anything else? Any honorable mentions?
The Gate.
The Gate.
Oh, cool.
Wait, from the 80s?
Yep. Okay. Stephen Dorff.
Dorff, as he's known. What if there was a Stephen Dorff and he was like his like little person impersonator? That'd be funny. All right. As always, you can find us on Twitter. Is that it? Anything else you guys want to talk about before we end this?
I think we're good.
Okay.
That's a wrap.
You can find us on Twitter at The Film Podcast. You could find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
I'm at Janae, JEHNEIGH.
I'm at An Adam Scott, AN_AdamScott.
I'm at K Zuberbier, that's ZUBERBIER.
And I am at Bob Freelander, BOBFREELANDER.
And then you could find Brian's blog at
RupertPupkinSpeaks.blogspot.com.
There you go. And you'll find lists from many, many different people.
Yes. I got quite a response, so it's probably going to run until mid to late February.
Oh, nice.
One new list every day.
What's your next topic?
I don't know.
Well, I want to prepare for next podcast.
I will
podcast.
Definitely let you know. I don't know. I hope I'm not out of ideas. But hopefully something will come to me by the end of February.
Cool. Well, there you go. Follow his blog. Follow Adam's blog at shootingthescript.com. You can find in-depth reviews of different movies that are out now. Some old, too. Right? Do you guys ever do old movies?
We have. I don't know. We're in a weird sort of stage. Reimagining phase right now. Okay. Where we're toying with the website. We're going to see what's going to happen with that.
Okay. All right. And then, so go friend us. Go write, if you can, go to iTunes and write us for a review, even if it's a bad one. I don't give a shit. Just write a review. All right. Until next time. Oh, also, if you're going to buy something off Amazon, and if you're going to buy one of these DVDs off Amazon, go over to our website and click on the little banner, and we'll get a little couple shekels our way. Also, some episodes to look forward to. We're going to do our year roundup, our favorite movies of 2012 at the end of the month when they announce the Oscars, probably around that time. And then, so keep looking forward to that. And until next time, keep it real. Have a good week.